This is another problem for lack of implicit financial flows. And that's our primary aim, actually, because the committees have not met, Tandy. We've not met on illicit financial flows because of the many other things we do, and I think that's our priority when it comes to oversight. Billions of money, billions of rands are disappearing from this country. And from what we can gather, large amounts are leaving this country or not being paid, at least, to the revenue service. So can we please focus on the issue of what would be ways of tackling this more decisively and ensuring the SARS gets what's due to it. So the Tobacco Institute for 20 minutes, starting now. Their submission, I think, is quite on already there. Obviously, people would not have time between Thursday afternoon and two holiday days between, if you like, to have presented beforehand their submission. So we'll take it that, you know, all of this will be distributed today. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you,
yeah.
If I may, with your permission, Stan. I'm humbled to be here. I'm humbled by your...
The problem is that he's not going to on record.
Sorry?
He's not going to on record.
Oh, yeah, you have to be on record.
And switch it on, ma'am. Thank you. Is that okay? Very happy to be on record. My name is Francois. I'm the chairman of the Tobacco Institute of Southern Africa. I'm here to tell you about the exact subject raised by the chair. We are very encouraged by the work that Parliament is doing, that the committees are doing, starting to interrogate things that are not right in our country. We are very encouraged by the new spirit in our country and the new leadership, and we are here to support. But in order to support, we also need to tell you what the problems are. And you are right, ma'am, smoking is not good for you. I'm the chair of the tobacco industry in this country. Smoking is harmful to your health, and people should not smoke, and therefore it should be sensibly regulated. I'll say something about that as well, just in brief, but there's a link. It is still a legal product, and it's a great source of income for governments all over the world. And my industry also makes significant contributions in investment in this country, which is all we need. We need to attract investment. But I can tell you, ma'am, to your point, that my industry is losing ground to the illicit economy that is growing parallel to this. And in the meantime, we don't address the smoking issue because illicit products are getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and the health agenda has been compromised. So, sir, just briefly, the time is limited. The first slide is just to tell you who TISA is. My industry comprises the full value chain in South Africa. All farmers in South Africa are members of the Institute. All merchants, all tobacco processors, all most manufacturers, importers and exporters in the legal industry. I have it in red there, ma'am, because this is the topic of today. There's a clear distinction between the legal industry, which I represent, and a parallel illegal industry out there, which we'll talk about. And that is where we need your help. As Parliament, so that we can channel those financial flows back into where it should be, and that is the fiscus. Our objectives for the industry is to ensure a reasonable regulatory framework, and with that I work with the whole of government. The illicit trade is one of our major strategic focuses, and we ensure and try and ensure the sustainability of our industry. As I said, we have a full value chain right down from the farmers to the other side. We believe in public-private partnerships, sir, like this, based on good relationships, mutual respect, and trust. And that's how we approach our work with government, on those basis, fundamental good relationships and trust. I'm not going to go through this. I have a full study that I can that I can give to you, which gives you a glance of the contribution of the TISA membership in this country. But you can see there, with its multiplier effects, generates economic activity of 54 billion rand per year in this country. So it's not a small industry. It makes a big contribution. It's what we need, and this is what needs to be protected. There you can see the jobs contribution to GDP, market valuation, exports, but I'm happy to share, and I will leave with Alan, infographics of all the contributions made by the industry in this country, and it would be great if you can have a look at that. I was just going to give a very brief overview. One of our main partners in government is SARS, because SARS is the revenue collector. and it's good to see the SARS people here. Our relationship goes back to as far as 2005, when there was a TISA SARS forum established. We worked on the basis of trust, good relationships, and sharing of information with our each respective roles. At the time, SARS actually mandated us to run a pilot project in one of our factories on new technology. And it goes back as far as 2011, where the then finance minister in the budget speech said in Parliament, we are in conjunction with the tobacco industry investigating a new method of marking and authenticating legal cigarettes with a counterfeit-proof digital tax system to replace the current diamond stamp. And it's on that basis, because the SARS and the minister encouraged us to run a pilot to see what new technology can be implemented to ensure that all volumes produced are actually declared to SARS and all duties paid. Now, the technology at the time was well accepted by SARS, right up to the top level, to the Exco. But unfortunately, at the time, and this is the truth, the Minister of Health intervened and said, no solution from the industry is acceptable, and it stopped right there. We are now 7 years later, and we still sit with the old technology of the time, which is very ineffective, but which we will get to. We accept that. We understand that. But we need to move forward. This is just to show the authentication of our relationship. In 2013, TISA received a World Customs Organization award from SARS of rendering exceptional services to government. And SARS referred many times to TISA as setting an example of public-private partnerships and how it should work. So this, I think, is proof of our relationship with SARS. We also had similar relationships with the Hawks, with the NPA, with the Defense Force, and with others. Now we've got to speak.
But you know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. But what's going to be this
in front of us? Don't worry,
sir, we'll make it work.
Yeah, we'll speak to it anyway.
Yes, we'll get the... The other point, sir, is that what we provided SARS with a lot of information. We provide them with affidavits. We shared information with them on research we did. We actually shared with them training manuals. At one stage, we trained up to 2,000 government officials, Hawks, security forces, SARS, about illicit trade and all those things. We destroyed illicit products on behalf of SARS and the customs supervision, all in an effort to support SARS. So, and then in 2013, there was serious intent by SARS to start taking action. And this is important that you understand this because of the history. And we received letters from SARS, specifically by Jan van Lochenberg at the time, announcing Project Honey Badger. And Project Honey Badger had intent to start tackling illicit trade in a serious way. We welcomed that, and we said we are open for investigations, but we would just like everybody to investigate it. And then an important part in our history, sir, is in 2014, unfortunately, the allegations of the rogue unit started. It's on the screen there, the book called Rogue. And there on the actions of that unit in SARS, which we believed were doing good work, stop right there. And all those, the involvement of alleged state capture was well documented in the book by Jan van Lochenberg, and no wonder why all investigations into the illicit tobacco trade stopped right there. And to be very frank with you, sir, but very open, between 2014 and 2017, from the outside, it seems that SARS did nothing about illicit trade. It was a time for illicit traders to make money. It was a time for my industry to bleed volumes, and we can prove that. So that is very unfortunate. But, sir, during time, as things progressed last year, we started working our way back into SARS, start re-establishing relationships to say we have a problem. There's illicit, there's a lot of money out there for the taking. We need to start working together to tackle the illicit trade. Then also in 2017, Jacques Poe's book appeared. And specifically, if you read the book, it is very explicitly explained in the book of the role that certain tobacco companies and individuals in our country played in the whole saga of state capture and why SARS did not do much during those years. But that's all public knowledge, it's all in the book, there for the reading, and it puts the picture together. So this year we eventually managed to have another meeting, first formal meeting in 4 years' time with SARS again, and we are encouraged and hopeful that there will be action taken. We've made proposals to SARS, sir, which I will repeat to you today so you know we're consistent in what we say and what we ask, and we just hope that SARS is going to start taking the action. What is illicit trade, sir? Just in a nutshell, people many times do not know, normally talk about counterfeiting. Our view is we do not have a counterfeiting problem in South Africa. There's no need to counterfeit because you can just not pay the duties and you have the same effect. Counterfeiting is dangerous. There's strong laws against counterfeiting and there's strong avenues available to brand owners who believe their brands are counterfeited. So in our view, counterfeiting is minute in this country and shouldn't receive much attention. The other thing is non-compliant. Department of Health, the law requires all those things to appear on a cigarette pack. There's markings that need to be on a pack as prescribed by law, health warnings, a quit line number, a diamond stamp, customs and excise, reduced ignition propensity paper, and tar nicotine readings, which are regulated by government. Mostly in our market, all products comply with that. Why? Because for illicit operators, it's easy. Make the pack look compliant. So put all the markings on the pack. If you see it in the shop, it looks compliant, fine. The biggest problem we have in this country, sir, and to your committee's role, is on the right hand there, is duty not paid. That is by far more than 90% of illicit products in our country is duty not paid. And I have the figure of 1785. 1785 is 1552 excise announced by the minister, plus VAT on the excise gives you 17.85. If a packet of cigarettes in this country is sold below 17.85, the alarm bells must go off and SARS must investigate, and they have to cooperate with the Hawks, with the NPA, because we need to lead the investigations, prosecuting and closing down those businesses. 1785 is due destined for government. On the picture there, you see a typical outlet where it says 60 Rand. 60 Rand is for a carton. That means 10 packets. That means 6 Rand a packet that you can buy cigarettes for in this country. To your point, ma'am, about the health agenda, what does that do to the health agenda? Now kids can buy cigarettes. Anybody can buy it. Vulnerable people can buy it. Those are the very people we want to protect. That's why we need to get to grips with this illicit trade. So it's independent research, and this is a staggering figure, shows that at least a quarter of this market is illegal. A quarter of any market illegal in any commodity is massive if you look at the impact that it has. In certain channels, it's 50 to 100%. The picture I have on there comes from the market. And there you see prices of 50 Rand, 65 Rand, 75 Rand. That is per carton. That is per 10 packs. That means consumers can buy those things for 7 Rand 50, 5 Rand, 6 Rand 50. This is the question that SARS must ask. SARS know these brands. They know who the manufacturers are of these brands. They're not my members. And they need to ask the questions, how do you manage to get your products for consumers in the market if you have paid your 17.85? It's absolutely impossible. Just another correction, people think about illicit in our country as smuggling. We had a smuggling problem years ago. SARS did wonderful work with their border modernization program, and it became very difficult to smuggle products from Zimbabwe. It just shifted locally. It actually makes it easier because now more than 90% of illicit products is manufactured locally in South Africa. So it's not a smuggling problem. We need to keep our eyes on the smuggling, but it's local manufacturing. And I say excise manipulation. What does excise manipulation mean? It means that a factory will produce 1,000 master cases of cigarettes. They will declare 200, for example, to SARS and pay excise on that, but the other 800 as some of these companies themselves have called in court documents stock B or the B stock. That goes out the back door, and that makes it possible to put products on the market for very, very cheap. Again, the mandate is with SARS about the brands. These companies are not garage operators. They are registered with SARS. They have a presence. They even pay some taxes, but they pay a fraction of what they should, and they distort the market, and they're killing the legal industry. 1785, I've already mentioned that, and staggering. This is what I said in the beginning. My industry's volumes have declined 20% over the past 5 years. And that is not what we want, because that is the industry that's here, that invest, that have the value chain, that support the farmers, that support communities, and all those things that we need in our country. But we are bleeding by about 5% per year. And that, unfortunately, ma'am, does not mean that people smoke less. Consumption is very stable, but less of the legal product is used. It's all shifted into these cheap products, because it's so cheap, it actually stimulates consumption. And that's why the role of this committee is so important. That is a picture that comes from the livelihood, Sustainable Livelihood Foundation. It's public knowledge. It's just they do investigation in rural areas and informal settlements about stuff that impacts the quality of life of those people. Obviously, cheap cigarettes are one of the things. So this is on their website, and on many of those, if you see the presentation, you'll see prices of 10 Rand, 10 Rand, 10 Rand, 10 Rand. There's one of 12 Rand. Again, bear in mind, 17.85 is the minimum collectible tax on a packet of cigarettes. So if a consumer pays 10 Rand, where's the taxes? Defrauded government. There's 10 Rand, there's 14 Rand 50. That's just a graph showing the illicit numbers of independent research of years. It runs into the billions of sticks. There's the losses, 27 billion lost to government alone between 2010 and 2016. And the impacts of illicit trade, what is it, sir? There's a fiscal impact, of course. 27 billion at the moment, at least 5 billion a year lost to government. Now put this on context with a 50 billion estimated shortfall of government. 10% is there for the taking. Easy pickings, as we say, low-hanging fruit. This is not a difficult problem to solve. And 10% of the deficit can be taken. And then, sir, to your point, apart from those losses, you have the knock-on effects of VAT, of personal income tax, of company taxes, because if operators operate illegally, obviously they don't declare the profits to government, they don't pay taxes, the income tax and all those. So it's a snowball effect. There's a social impact, sir, to your point, ma'am. Why? Because it compromises government's health agenda. What can you expect if the market is flooded with cigarettes, 6 Rand, 7 Rand and 8 Rand a packet? A vulnerable youth, our youth, all these people. We can't afford that. And then there's a threat to jobs. In a time where our country is looking to preserve jobs and encourage jobs, my industry is shedding jobs. One of my companies, manufacturing companies, closed their factory 2 years ago. Other big enterprise is losing jobs, bleeding jobs, because of reduced volumes. The farmers are producing less leaf because the orders to them are becoming less. There's 8 to 10,000 farm workers. Where will they go? Working on tobacco farms. There's a fantastic project within our industry of 155 emerging tobacco farmers receiving support from the industry, receiving training, receiving all the things that is required. And most on top of it, they are also helped and encouraged to produce food, to have food security in rural areas. So they have a little bit of tobacco, but they have maize and other food crops, and this is a perfect model that we need in our country to sustain people in deep rural areas. And then, so there's another impact, which is fueling organized crime and corruption. And this is what Interpol is saying, that it is a well-known fact that illicit cigarettes is the money spinner, but it creates money to go into human trafficking, money laundering, weapon smuggling, and all those things. That's a well-known fact. And since 2014, what happened in SARS, all the books that were published, you see what the role was of tobacco money in the alleged state capture and corruption subsequently. Our expectation, sir, and we can only humbly ask and tell the story as it is. We can't solve illicit trade. We can help, we can support, we can provide support to all government agencies, and we're happy to do that in spirit of partnership. But because local manufacturing is the biggest problem, the mandate lies squarely with SARS. And in the short term, sir, and this is a business case, the first step that can be taken by way of speaking almost tomorrow, why don't we put customs officials in all factories in this country? It would immediately... SARS are busy with investigating longer-term solutions, systemic solutions, which are perfect. Those must run. But, sir, we need something now, because in 2 years from now, if I stand here, my industry will be gone. The legal industry will be gone. The whole market will be supplied and has the potential to supply illicit products. Put short-term customs officials in all factories in South Africa, including my members. We welcome that. There's four key inputs that goes into a cigarette. That's leaf, that's packaging material, that's the filter that goes on the end of the cigarette, and there's reduced ignition propensity paper that's a specific paper. All four of those things are under the control of SARS. So it's easy to validate that what goes into a factory must correspond with the volumes on the outside. Remember, we work on an honesty-based system in our country. You are supposed as a manufacturer to declare all your production to SARS and pay the duty at source. We work on a duty at source system. So
you are close to 20.
Thank you, sir. Then minimum pricing.
I can give it to you a moment.
We need urgent attention to minimum pricing because that would improve enforcement. Then the police can start enforcing in the market. With SARS, the solution lies with the manufacturer and not in the market with thousands of retailers. We need a stable excise regime. Our national treasury has always been very consistent with excise, which is good, and it needs to remain that way. Replacement of the diamond stamp, they are the requirements that we ask for. We do research, independent, robust third-party research. We'll share those figures, and we do share those figures with SARS. We have a training offer to SARS. We have a training manual. We can help assist train SARS, Hawks, the NPA. We can talk about tobacco because that's what we do and that's what we know. Destruction of goods, that's the way that we destroyed products before for SARS. Unfortunately, SARS stopped this. I don't know how they destroy now, but illicit products need to be destroyed. Otherwise, the warehouses get full and they get stolen. Political will, SARS, we need this committee. There's also an action from NEDLAC and a request to SARS. We would like to see a report from the law enforcement agencies here to your committee to say, what are we going to do? Because time and speed is required here. And then we offer partnership, sir. Absolutely. And then better cooperation between SARS, enforcement agencies, and prosecution. Those three need to be knit very, very closely together to lead to the kingpins and close down those businesses. And then the last point is Cabinet last week approved a bill, which we believe is not a priority. We would like to see government making illicit trade a priority. One provision in the bill which we haven't been consulted so far, is, for example, plain packaging. Plain packaging is commoditizing the products, taking all brands away from packets, and which will drive pricing down. We will then see illicit spiking to 50, 60, 70% in this country. So our plea is, yes, there's a bill, but let us first tackle illicit trade, because this bill, from what we hear, is very controversial, will not address, ma'am, smoking, but it will increase illicit trade, which will again compromise the health agenda. We need the health agenda to work. I thank you very humbly for this opportunity. Happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. No, we will be having questions.
Thank you,
you'll see the program provides for that. Where's Peter? Peter? Yeah. Is that Mr. Nguni?
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay, you want to speak from there? All right. Could somebody kindly switch this off? Can you let him be relaxed? It's his parliament. You happy there?
I'm happy.
Okay, there's no rule that says you have to come to the front.
Okay.
Let's not discuss that yet again. You're happy there? This is your parliament. Fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. Look, I must say I'm quite taken aback by what's been said by Mr. Van der Merwe. Obviously, I'd had discussions with him in the past about the organization becoming a the industry becoming a unified one, and both our respective organizations creating some sort of cooperative relationship and addressing government as a unified sort of body. He first mentions that he represents the entire legal industry, and there then exists parallel industries. One would therefore then have to question whether our members, who are all legitimate VM licensed manufacturers, fall under this parallel industry that Mr. Van der Merwe mentioned. I see Patrick Mooring from SARS is here, and I think he can confirm that all our VAT members are in fact legitimate and are licensed with the Revenue Service. He then goes on to mention track and trace solutions, which would then be put into place by government to track the number of cigarettes manufactured by various manufacturers. What he fails to mention is that Codentify, for instance, which is the biggest and most punted track and trace solution by Big Tobacco, was formulated by Philip Morris International and has since 2010 received support from British American Tobacco, Imperial Tobacco, and JTI International, and is contrary to Article 8.2 of the World Health Organization, which South Africa is a signatory of. which in essence states that Big Tobacco cannot be party to the formulation or the implementation of any policies which govern the tobacco industry. I am also taken aback by the fact that he then says that SARS did nothing from 2014 to 2017 in relation to the enforcement of regulations governing the tobacco industry. We've had many engagements with the receiver, which have been positive, and in essence what they've done is they've taken adequate steps to ensure that our members are compliant at all times, and there has never been any sort of untoward relationship, as he seems to insinuate. The reference to the Jacques Pau and the Johan van Lokeren books are also quite astonishing in that if you read both books, quite a large reference is made, in fact, to members of the Tobacco Institute of South Africa and, in essence, their efforts to destabilize the revenue service. You would recall that, for instance, our own organization was formulated by British American Tobacco through an agent of theirs who was acting surreptitiously as an attorney for our members, Belinda Walter, who was also in a relationship with Van Lokerenburg of SARS. And in essence, they and the illicit tobacco SARS team, which included members of a number of law enforcement agencies, were responsible, as is quoted by Van Lokerenburg and Carl in his book, for the destabilization of the revenue service at the time. One of the most astonishing aspects of Mr. Van der Merwe's address is that he says counterfeiting is not a problem in South Africa. I was on a TV program 2 weeks ago where I was, in essence, asked about the problem of counterfeiting, and I brought together with me an attorney from one of our members who had discovered factories in both Lesotho and Zimbabwe, which was quite sophisticated factories producing large volumes of our member brands, I think the biggest being Gold Leaf Tobacco and Carney Links, and smuggling them into South Africa through our porous borders. So although SARS may have taken, and the police may have taken steps to rectify the porous border situation, it is still a massive problem. And we have discussed this in a meeting as recently as, I think, February of this year with SARS, you know, where we were asked about the question of the pricing of our member brands. And you'll find that they are also legitimate brands manufactured in Zimbabwe that are also manufactured in South Africa, which in essence look exactly like the brands manufactured by our members. So in essence, what we're stating is that smuggling is still in place in South Africa. Mr. Van der Merwe then goes on to state that the Minister of Health has in essence scuppered all efforts by his organizations and SARS to introduce this track and trace system. This is obviously correct because the minister is following the World Health Organization Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which governs the policies which governments should follow in terms of implementation of policies governing the tobacco industry. And they state clearly that Big Tobacco or any tobacco entities cannot interfere in government policy implementations. This again goes to the fact that Mr. Van der Merwe goes on to state that his organization has been trying to push government to push certain agendas, which obviously suit them and are to the detriment of other manufacturers and players in the industry in order to ensure some sort of compliance, which is not the case. But I will get to that in the address that I had actually prepared.
I'm sorry to interject. Have you made people aware about their inputs and their legal implications in case somebody can be taken to court for what they've said here?
As far as I understand it, it's Frank here. You can't be taken to court for anything you say.
No, only members cannot be taken to court. But
yeah, well, look, I can't prescribe to people. The committee, Tandy, I can only alert them. Do you want to alert them? Okay, can you alert them?
No, I'm saying, because maybe people might not be aware, if you make mention of companies and countries and information that might come before a court of law, you might be susceptible to litigation, but in our case we're not. So I'm just cautioning you that use the information that it's of use for you, but does protect you legally in case you're taken to task outside this meeting.
Indeed, it's fully noted. I'm actually an attorney by trade, so I'm fully aware of the implications. I I can back up all the issues that I have raised through factual evidence. And I think Mr. Van der Merwe, and it's been raised in the media ad nauseum, all these issues that I've discussed. So it's nothing new that I've raised.
Sense. Tandy, you are right to alert him. I thought, I've never heard of this, though, quite frankly. I've never heard of a case. NPA is here, right? Has there ever been a case of somebody using what somebody else said in a hearing or a briefing and taking it to court? I've never heard of it, but maybe it's happened. With which case? With what? Oh, well, okay, fine.
Okay.
People know they have... you know what, in this committee we allow people to speak their mind. That's what we fought for.
100%.
Right? Now
exactly.
We can't, we must change the constitution. So
I agree
with your mind.
I was raising a general point.
Yeah. But if you get into trouble, as Comrade Tandy's pointing out, that's your business, you're a lawyer, right?
Indeed.
Yeah. You're free to say what you want to say, but the first thing that strikes one is, our main concern is the money must go to SARS, whether it's you or TISA or anybody.
I agree fully with you.
So, you can both fight here. It's not going to help. We're not interested in your fight.
Exactly.
We want both of you to observe the law. That's all.
100%.
And we want the law, the people here to act. And we want the $5 billion.
Exactly.
We must know one thing. We are gone here, many of us, right, by next year. But in our exit report, we're going to make it clear. If you people don't get the money and prosecute people for the next 5 years, this committee is going to haunt you.
Yeah. Don't want to use my right to speak. You promised me. Right? But I also have a right to speak here. My job is to check.
Indeed, Chair. Chair, your comments are well noted. I just wanted to quickly wrap up my reply to Mr. Van der Merwe's submission. He then mentioned the health implications, which are affecting South Africans in general as a result of the growing amount of illicit products on the market. We cannot dispute that, but what we're saying is we recently attended the World Conference on Tobacco Health, which stated that big tobacco is primarily the reason behind the health issues affecting the world in relation to cigarette products. The closed factory issue that Mr. Van der Merwe raises, I think he's referring to Philip Morris's factory and the Japan Tobacco International factory that closed. My understanding is that they, in essence, took a commercial decision, and it had nothing to do with the illicit market. They took a commercial decision to bring in their cigarettes from Switzerland under the U1 certificate, which, in essence, allows them to bring them in without paying any duty, if I'm correct. Yeah. And lastly, final points, in relation to the farm workers, that's also been dealt with ad nauseum by the World Convention on Tobacco Health, where it stated that the big tobacco multinationals create these rigid agreements with farm workers, where, for instance, British American Tobacco in 2016 ran a full-page advert in the Sunday Times where they stated that they are responsible for 90% of the purchases from farm workers in South Africa. The reason being that they create conditions where farm workers aren't then allowed, farmers aren't then given the opportunity. I know you're looking at me from VAT, but they create conditions where our members, for instance, and this is factual, you cannot dispute this, have not been able to acquire leaves from local farmers because they're told that if they buy from our members, then they will then have to deal with the repercussions. This is in line with many of the anti-competitive practices I'm going to raise in my address, which I've prepared. And finally, one thing that I can agree on with Mr. Van der Merwe is the issue of minimum pricing. We agree to that. I mean, it's for the benefit of the country and for the benefit of the fiscus, provided obviously that a properly constituted and regulated consultative process is followed. We have no issue with the minimum pricing. Now, just to give a bit of background on our organization, the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association, FITA. We've been actively trading for a number of years. The organization's been in place since 2012, initially through very surreptitious sort of agendas, which I initially mentioned. Our oldest member is about 20 years in the market. As a collective, we contribute
billions towards the economy directly by way of profit generation, employment, and job creation, and indirectly by way of corporate and personal income tax, customs and excise duties, VAT, municipal taxes, and other levies and taxes associated with operating businesses in South Africa. Our members are relatively new in the industry, but we now represent the majority of local manufacturers in the tobacco industry. Collectively, our members employ over 1,000 skilled people countrywide. This does not factor in the thousands of indirect jobs created by our members in the informal sector through hawkers and traders who sell our member products and brands nationwide. One of the main problems with the South African economy is that it remains largely untransformed and largely controlled by the same companies, institutions, and people as in the past. If we as a country are to move forward and to succeed, economic transformation must be a national priority. The tobacco industry in its own right has been dominated by monopolistic, largely white, and foreign capital for decades. Unfortunately, this relationship does not seem to have changed, and very much does not seem to have changed very much in the democratic era. The lack of transformation is responsible for a large number of the issues we witness today in the tobacco industry. The industry is restrictive, anti-competitive, riddled with unethical practices, as has been documented in the media and what I've recently just discussed, and it in essence prevents new entrants from entering into the market. People will ultimately, therefore, find illegitimate methods of entering the market. FITA members, by way of example, have been restricted largely to the informal trade sector as the multinationals, all foreign-owned, have been around for over 100 years, have created trading conditions which result in our members, who are all local and proudly South African, being unable to properly enter the formal market and stock their products in retail stores. The multinationals have, in essence, use resources built in the old apartheid era to create relationships with retailers, which we submit are anti-competitive, to ensure that retailers do not stock our member brands, but stock solely their brands, the brands of multinationals. This is due to the fact that through their vast resources, they are able to offer retailers rebates and kickbacks in order to keep our members out of the market and keep us in an informal trade where our brands are sold primarily by hawkers and spaza shops. By and large, the South African market consists of products sold by multinational manufacturers who operate under the umbrella of TISA, on the one hand, and another group which of local manufacturers which operate under our organization, known as FITA, and further, a smattering of independent and unassociated traders. Of course, apart from these identifiable groups, there are also those engaged in the illicit trade. Credible studies by, amongst others, eminent academics of the University of Cape Town, Professor Corne van Waalbeck being one, have advanced that the prevalence and size of the so-called illicit trade in tobacco products is often exaggerated by some in order to attempt to influence government policies and directives in the industry and to deflect law enforcement efforts away from the lesser known practices such as aggressive tax avoidance and tax-based erosion practices. FITA agrees wholeheartedly with these studies. Needless to say, these types of schemes are solely attributable to multinationals. This is so because local manufacturers are practically unable to engage in such practices even if they wanted to. The so-called illicit cigarette trade, we submit, affects FITA members...
We've got about 2 minutes left.
Fantastic.
But in fairness,
I won't stop here. The so-called illicit cigarette trade, we submit, affects FITA members more than any other stakeholder in the local industry. We have, via our own means and the combined resources of our members, taken steps to combat this malady. We have to date received no support from government other than from the Revenue Service and none from law enforcement agencies, despite them bending over backwards for these foreign multinationals. This could be because they sponsor the South African Police Service Excellence Awards, amongst other things, in contravention of the World Health Organization's Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. We have uncovered illegitimate but sophisticated factories, as I earlier mentioned, in neighboring countries, which allow then the proponents of these entities to smuggle goods into South Africa, which are mainly counterfeit and illicit. This is despite our constant alertment to law enforcement agencies, and we have not received any sort of assistance from them therein. We therefore can only rely on our own resources and expertise to try to tackle these issues. Whilst in principle, FITA members support all efforts by the state to implement whatever mechanisms considered prudent in the pursuit of compliance, we are of the opinion that communication between our industry and government and its institutions has been monopolized, dominated, and controlled by this monopoly. This has resulted in a plethora of issues within the tobacco industry. TISA, for instance, purports to represent the entire value chain of the legitimate industry, including tobacco farmers, leaf processors, leaf merchants, manufacturers, and the like. But yet, only has one manufacturer member with a factory in South Africa. I earlier alluded to the fact that they had closed down their factories as they were trading under more favorable conditions by having their factories bringing in stuff in from Switzerland. There has been evidence of too many instances in the past which point to various practices by certain role players in the tobacco industry that speak to unfair treatment of some by the state, preferential treatment in other cases, and various uncompetitive processes. The simple reality is that whilst illicit manufacturing and smuggling may be a common and, in our view, over-publicized malady in the industry, there are a multitude of other ills that affect economic growth and losses to the fiscus that need to be addressed by the state. We believe that a more holistic approach is required of the state to address losses to the fiscus, of which illicit manufacturing and smuggling form but a part. I'll be wrapping up shortly.
You're going to submit your representation?
Indeed, we'll do so.
By the way, Dikeledi also sent a message, right, Tandi? That she's coming in late. And what's her name rang me? Myself also, there's only one flight from Imsen Dussie in the morning.
In closing, Chair, we believe that the time has come for all stakeholders to meaningfully deal with all the challenges facing the tobacco sector in South Africa and to ensure that the playing field is level for all. The old refrain of smuggling and the illicit manufacturing being the primary cause of losses to the fiscus is now running thin. The fact of the matter is that billions are pilfered out of the economy annually by a handful of entities through aggressive profit-based erosion schemes. We firmly believe that the government should refocus their resources and attention to include a more holistic approach to the industry. We further believe it is incumbent on the state, and in fact it is a duty, to put measures in place that will level the economic landscape and give us, as local employers and contributors to the economy, equal hearing and platforms. We believe the days of big business having some sway over the ways the state should direct its powers, actions, and resources in the tobacco industry should now come to an end.
Thank you. Okay, Treasury, where are you? Who's speaking on behalf of Treasury? Ah, hello, my friend.
We have got Treasury submission. It's in red. Right. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Treasury side being responsible for excise taxes, I'll just start by saying that the issues around the need for taxation, I think has been spoken about, and the issue around sort of the ills or the externalities related to tobacco consumption have already been spoken about. The World Health Organization, they have the convention that deals with tobacco and dealing with the externalities related to tobacco consumption. And South Africa has signed the World Health Organization Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. And also looking at government in implementing policies to reduce consumption.
What would you respect? You were 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
We're not
okay,
discussing those issues.
Yeah, it'll be quick, yeah.
Actually, you'll be surprised what we really feel in the ANC. You heard one person speak, right?
Okay.
But there's no legal ban up till today, right?
Okay.
Then people must pay the money. The money belongs to the people. It doesn't belong to you or this committee. They must pay. Or they must go to jail. So all of you, we're not so interested in the two of them right now. We're interested in Treasury. What are you doing to ensure that these people end up in jail or pay the money they should to SARS? You want to know from SARS what you're doing? Boxer, yeah.
So my brother...
Okay, yeah. You want action. Action is what we want.
All right. So in terms of the... Just as a brief background, the exercise duty that we have implemented over the years, we use a targeted exercise tax regime where the excise tax is set around 40%, whereas the World Organization encourages countries to look at a taxation of around 70%. And I think this is quite important because what we hear in engagements with the industry is that the excise increases fuel the prevalence of illicit trade. So I think that needs to be put in its proper proper context, because I think most of the things are focused on much on enforcement and what SARS does do with regards to that. we started with 50% excise tax incident, and that was increased to 52%. And in from 2015, we started focusing on excise rather than the total tax burden, which resulted in a 40% tax incidence. So this just gives the rate that has been increased over the years. And then again, with regards to complementary measures that deal with tobacco consumption, the Department of Health has done quite a lot in terms of non-tax measures to reduce consumption of tobacco. And again, we've seen that over the years, those measures have led to the reduction in the prevalence rate. And I think this is quite important. I think from us as policymakers around taxation, yes, we want to see consumption reduced. But I think if consumption is shifted towards illicit, I think that becomes a concern. You know, because then again, it undermines the objective of government in terms of the health policies that we are advancing, and also again, it undermines sort of like the revenue that should rightfully go to the fiscal. And I think that needs to be to be dealt with. And with the National Treasury hosted a workshop in 2013, just to try to get a sense of the size of illicit trade in South Africa, and we had a number of scholars coming and also industry participating in the workshop in terms of looking at what research they have done to try to look at the size of illicit trade. And then again, the numbers vary quite substantially. Basically, looking at around 4% to about 30%. You know, depending on basically who's doing the research and all of that. And of late, the industry has been talking about around 47% to about 50% of illicit trade. So I think there's another work that needs to be done to really quantify what the size of the illicit trade is. Now, one other important issue in terms of dealing with illicit trade, as I've already indicated, that South Africa signed the convention in 2005. But then one of the elements that came out of the of Article 15 of the convention was the protocol on the elimination of illicit trade in tobacco products that came in 2012. South Africa has not yet ratified that protocol. I think the Department of Health is leading efforts to get South Africa to ratify the protocol, so that the issues that are outlined in the protocol with regards to track and trace and other measures can be implemented. And basically, there is just to say that we did that workshop on that. And in budget 2017, we announced that we'll be making an announcement we made an announcement around the amendments that we consider marking and the marking, tracing, and trend tracking system of tobacco products. And also in budget 2018, we also looked at the additional measures that we'll explore around minimum price. Because what we have been getting from the industry is that from an enforcement point of view, basically they don't have a tool to be able to do that. But if we sort of like include or legislate minimum pricing, then it will somehow assist in terms of enforcement with regards to this illicit product. And when one looks at the excise, that issue, currently sitting at 15 rand 20 per pack of 20, and then if you include that, I think Mr. Van Merwe talked about I think it's around 17.50 or something like that. So basically, then if let's say for example that is legislated, then one can be able to identify what is illicit, and we have made announcements around looking at that. And Chris can talk about.
Thanks. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Just talking about the revenue loss as well. So this has coming into the fore. This issue is coming into the fore. What do we see on the revenue side? We've just put a chart there to show what's happening with excise duties on tobacco, particularly cigarettes. It really is having a big revenue impact, and that revenue impact has hit the hardest in the last 2 years. So this year, I mean, for the 2017-18 year, we forecast that we should get about 15 billion. In cigarette excise duties from domestic manufacturers. That came out at 11 billion. That's a 4 billion loss just on the domestic manufacturer. That's about a 26% decrease. SARS did mention to us that there was a large local manufacturer that did leave the country. So we would have at least then have thought that if consumption was the same, we should have got it from imported excise duties on cigarettes. But this chart shows when you combine domestic and import, there's a decrease. This is the first decrease we've had since we go back to 2002, and it's just a straight line upwards. And suddenly in the last 2 years, it's flattened and then started to decrease. There's a huge gap between what we thought we were going to get and what we are actually getting from cigarette excise duties. If this was due to a decrease in consumption, great. We're meeting our objectives, we're meeting our health goals. But we doubt that it is. We doubt that there's such a big change in the last 2 years. So there is some hard evidence to say that this illicit trade is becoming more and more of an issue in the last few years. Okay, if we go to the next slide. So the problem is a lot of this illicit trade is linked to serious allegations that have been made. And we need to get to the bottom of that. So what can we do, Chair? You've asked, what can we do? What can we do as Treasury? From a Treasury perspective, we deal with the policy, we deal with the legislative matters. We put through the marking track and trace legislation in 2016, that was to be able to provide a framework to allow that system to come in. As we've heard this morning, there are some issues with how that is actually implemented and the level of industry involvement and other factors. We've got the legislative framework to do it through the Income Tax Act, but now the actual implementation is the issue on that point, and there are some serious concerns from the Ministry of Health, which those concerns are still valid. So that is one of the things. Industry has said, well, you should actually be reducing the excise duties from a tax policy perspective to reduce this illicit trade. We don't believe that. We have stuck it at 40% as a proportion of the excise of the price of the cigarette. We don't think slight reductions in the excise duty are going to tackle this problem. In our view, this is an enforcement problem. And this enforcement needs to get to the bottom of. If we go and we look at that serious reduction in the revenues, a lot of it does stem from a lot of the allegations and the reduction in enforcement capacity within SARS that follows some of the allegations that are made from 2014-15. So there does need to be, in our view, an increase in the amount of capacity that SARS and others are able to utilize to be able to tackle this issue. There also needs to be greater cooperation, in our view, between SARS, SAPS, NPA, and others to try and tackle it. And the big problem is we need to get to the bottom of these serious allegations. The Commission of Inquiry into SARS needs to look into this and find out what actually happened, what can we do to strengthen it. And importantly, a lot of these things have also arisen from some of the industry involvement. Those allegations from industry against the industry play an important part of why this capacity has been undermined. The industry is complaining today about illicit trade. but some in industry were a pivotal part of, appear to be a pivotal part of why this enforcement was undermined in the first place. So, you know, there is, you can't say there's no blame on all sides, and this needs to be investigated further. From a Treasury point of view, we're happy to coordinate. We want to, you know, set the legislative framework in place, but from an enforcement perspective, we would need to rely on other institutions.
Thank you very much.
Oh, below 15 minutes, that's great, because we need discussion and action. Now, if I have my own way, colleagues, can we just get some agreement from the majority here? Mm. Ideally, when I did the program, I originally put all the submissions and then questions, because the issue is really what action is being taken. But I know people get, and Tandi in particular, and I hope she's listening, get restless. So I broke it up. But my view still remains, we should take all the submissions and then have a discussion. Okay, who's against that? Fine. Let's go. Next. You know what? We want action. No, it's too late, Tandi. I'm not going to repeat it.
No, you
it's fine. No, there's no rule that says if a person's chatting with somebody else, I do it to Mr. Mania and them. I've got to be fair. I love you, Tandi, but the rule applies to you too. Right. Can we move on? Right. Next submission, please. No, don't worry. You know what I'm saying, Tandi. Right, who's next? We want action. No, you're sitting here and it's not a seminar, okay? So, I had, originally it's for you mainly, because I know what you're going to put. You don't have too many inputs. I want to ask questions.
No, I want to get every time.
Yeah, okay, fine. You're going to have all.
Yeah,
okay. Let's go. We want action. These are the people that really matter now, Tandi. These are the people, SARS, FIC, Hawks, and NPA. These are the people that we most want to interrogate, right? Let those people kill each other, right? But these four are answerable to us directly. Now we want, Tandi, for you to pay 100% attention. Please not interfere with Tandi, anybody? Teboho? Don't interfere with Tandi. Now the committee meeting really starts, right? Right, these are the people, they must tell us where's the money, and if they can't deliver that 5 to 25 billion, we want the money from them. How about that? Let's start with that. If you don't raise that money, we want it from you. Okay? Good.
From your pocket. Right. Good. Nothing will stop. Where are you? Okay. Did I speak to you over the weekend?
On Monday. Thanks. William.
William, sorry. Good. Thank you. Yes, William, my friend. 15 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the members and the committee. I'm not going to touch on some of the things that have already been elucidated, like the legislation itself. So obviously we were part of the introduction of the legislation in terms of the Tobacco Control or the Tax Administration Loss Amendment Bill included some of the things that were elucidated elsewhere or at the beginning of the presentation. Thanks. Just to illustrate, this slide actually just shows that SARS is not only dealing with tobacco as an excise product, it's dealing with a number of products in as far as excise product is concerned. There's about three categories thereof, and there's quite a number of them that we're dealing with. So tobacco is just but one of the things that we're dealing with that we have to enforce and most of our things. It has been mentioned that there has been some acquisition of technology in as far as control of tobacco product is concerned, and certainly SARS is in that process currently, and this is exactly what we're doing to control tobacco a little bit better. What has been spoken about that the diamond stamp is not effective, certainly so it's not effective, and through the legislation and through the technology that we are busy acquiring at the moment, we're trying to do that work a little bit better going forward. And what this will do for us is for each and every piece of cigarette that is produced in a factory, that has to be reported to SARS in a particular manner, and that is covered in the legislation itself. And through technology, we'll be able to do that. We're in the process of doing that, and the next slide, in actual fact, cover where we are in the project itself. This is just a high level overview of the process going forward, where it started, and where we are currently. We are currently busy with acquiring services of a transaction advisor, working with Treasury through proper procurement process. We are in that process of acquiring that transaction advisor. This is quite something that we haven't done in the past. It's quite new to us. We we've done a number of benchmarking to various countries, one of them being Kenya, that are running similar type of systems currently. And we have found that if we were just to rush into the whole process of acquiring this particular system, we might find ourselves wanting later on in the process. So we're taking baby steps and we're making sure that we cover all aspects of this process, crossing the T's and dotting the I's, as it were. So the next slide basically tells you the detail of what it is that we're doing in this regard. I think what is important, as the chairperson has said, that action is required. The next slide will actually deal with exactly what it is that we've done so far in terms of regulating a little bit better this issue. And perhaps at the outset, I would like to mention the fact that we do acknowledge that we haven't done enough in the past 2-3 years, and that more needs to be done in this field. And certainly, the acting commissioner has committed to the fact that he will raise his and, for that matter, the SARS's efforts in making sure that this this issue is dealt with a little bit better going forward. These are the numbers. Since 2014, we had put together an integrated audit team in as far as tobacco is concerned. And when we talk about integrated audit, we're speaking about audit from all tax types. So not only excise, but all tax types. So a player in the market, in the tobacco industry market, would be audited from starting with the excise part, out of going through all taxes, including company tax, pay-as-you-earn taxes, and everything else involved. Just in the year of 2017-2018 that has just finished, we done at least, we issued engagement letters, meaning that we wanted to engage with the client himself to say we're going to start an audit. We issued about 34 letters in that regard. We have done 43 business reviews, meaning that we go through a business to understand its operations from end to end, so that by the time we do the engagement and we do the audit itself, at least we're talking about something that we understand. We completed 12 full scope audits. This is where we go, you know, top to toe and top from one point to the other, making sure that we cover all aspects of a particular client. Out of those audits, we've issued letters of intent, meaning that we intend to issue a particular finding of about 67 million. Letters of assessment or demand amounting to about 326 million. We've collected 228 million, and we've audited all registered manufacturers just to check their processes, whether they are aligned to everything else that they're supposed to align to. And since the inception of the project itself, those are the numbers on the screen, 151 limited scope audits done, and this is what we call low-hanging fruit. So if we were to find that there is something that is maybe not 100% all right with a particular client, do a quick audit to check if everything else is in place. Also, those goes with low-risk audits, and 102 business reviews all in all have been done, and with factory visits. Of that, we found that there was non-compliance in as far as outstanding returns are concerned, and as I said, when we do the integrated audit, we check all taxes. So in that process, as we were doing this audit, we found that there were certain outstanding returns that were not submitted, and all in all, we managed to collect and bring into compliance some of the clients that were not in compliance. And this is almost 900 of those. We've collected ever since about 1 billion rand, and we've assessed 1.7 billion rand in total. Mm-hmm. Some of these are in litigation, because when we raise an assessment, there's an objection, and clients take us through all other legal avenues that they can take us through, obviously to avoid paying the taxes that they're supposed to pay. And this is within their right, if anything. Let me correct that. So these are the numbers basically of what we have done. on a day-to-day operation perspective, we've had seizures since between 2014 and 2017-18 of 1,268 incidents of seizures. So we would be perhaps at Bybridge or any of the border posts or something like that, or in a factory where a production hasn't been declared properly to us. We've seized incidences of those seizures. It's about 1,268 seizures that we have made. The value thereof is about 217, and in all in all, sticks of about 270 million sticks. Mention was made of the fact that we don't do destruction with TISA any longer. Yes, it is true. However, we do destruction with disposal companies to be neutral to everybody else in the industry. And we do some other methods, perhaps, or different methods of destruction as going forward. The other matter that was mentioned had to do with stakeholder management. That stakeholder management has ground to a halt. It is true to a certain extent. However, we have had different discussions with both TISA as well as FITA separately, with a view of bringing back the a combined stakeholder management between the among the three players, being SARS, TISA, and FITA themselves, so that we can have a level playing field and we can deal with the whole industry in the same way. And the intention of this is so that we can uplift compliance levels, we can have better information and management amongst the players, between SARS and the players themselves, and also we can have obviously better relationships with the client. And if there's any non-compliance that we find in the industry, we present it to the players and say, this is what your members are doing out there, and it is incumbent upon yourself as a team or as a group of companies or as an association to make sure that your players play by the rules, of which if they don't do, we will obviously bring the necessary consequences against them. So this is what we have done so far, Chairperson. And as I said, we do acknowledge that there has been a lack of effort from the SARS side, but it is the intention of the acting commissioner that we raise our game in this regard. I will stop there. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Use 10 minutes or more or less. FIC, where are you? You can sit there, it's fine. Oh, you got a, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Good morning. My name is Advocate.
Good morning. My name is Advocate Kodisile Kanyele, Director
FIC. Oh, yeah, I was speaking to you, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with three of my colleagues. I'm with Christopher Malan, who is the head of CAP, which is Compliance and Prevention. And on my right is Mr. Peter Albert, who is the manager for monitoring and analysis. I also have Mr. Maxwell Mashiani, who is a senior analyst.
Can I just finish in 15 minutes? I mean, you know, I must tell you, Tandy, Mr. Mania, I phoned these people, some of them on Monday morning, right? And I phoned people on Thursday afternoon thinking they'll have a legitimate excuse, in which case we drop this thing. But all of them cooperated, right? So let me thank you, Abdul Tamil. I know you got the invitation only, I think we finally sent a written one on Monday after 3. I spoke to you Monday morning, is that right? Monday afternoon, yeah, there you are. So, I mean, really, thank you very much.
I must say the FIC really carries one piece of the puzzle in this issue. We were there to assist in the identification of the proceeds of crime, and we also combat money laundering and the financing of terrorism. What we do, we analyze the reports that we get, the financial reports that we get. We process them, analyze them, and interpret them, and then prepare or generate what we call a financial intelligence report. That is the report really that constructs a story that tells you what's the nature of business that is being conducted, what is the source of funds, and what's the intended purpose of those funds. We then generate that report and then disseminate it and share it with the stakeholders. The gap that we're having in our system, which we're really addressing currently with the NPA, the police, and the Hawks, is feedback. That in the reports that we have generated,
we must be able really to get feedback that says that there's been a successful investigation and there's been a successful prosecution in those matters. There's a presentation which is very, very short. It will just take 5 minutes. And thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honourable members of the committee and people present. From as the advocate director of the FIC indicated, we receive process analyzed transactional information that we receive from accounting institutions, and we process that to develop financial intelligence products. We made that information available to stakeholders like supervisory bodies and law enforcement agencies. We also is allowed to share information with financial intelligence units internationally on operational matters where we think it's of necessary to obtain information from them, but also to share information. Then we ensure also that guidance is given to accountant institutions to make sure that they report information to us. And then, as you would have been aware, we're not an investigative authority, but we support investigations using financial intelligence being reported to us. Where do we fit into the value chain? On the left side of the slide, you'll see that the institutions that need to comply with FICA, the Financial Intelligence Center Act, compliance is being monitored by our compliance department and also the supervisory bodies. We receive the information in our database. We analyze and monitor this information. We then enrich it with other information in our possession, and which is then disseminated to law enforcement agencies, and they then start a criminal investigation. In some matters, they are already busy with a criminal investigation. They will then submit back a request to us for further information. And most of our work is concentrated around this area. We also assist and support law enforcement in analyzing financial information in terms of evidence to assist in presenting that as evidence in a court process. What interventions did we do in terms of the illicit tobacco trade? As you would have been aware, the predicate offence dealing with this is mostly fraud or contraventions of the Customs and Excise Act, which is a predicate offence for money laundering, which falls slowly into our mandate. I'm not going to go into the detail about the legislation. I think all of you are experts in that field. We support project-driven investigations. What the Hawks did, they normally identify a group of people involved in a specific area. They then create a project team around that, and the Financial Intelligence Center is also involved in assisting them by providing financial intelligence for this project-driven investigations. Over and above, we also respond to various requests from law enforcement agencies. We continuously meet with law enforcement and the South African Revenue Services to understand the requirements to enable or to better our support we're giving to investigations. We assist in the financial analysis of transactions being reported to us by financial institutions and other information in our possession. Based on the matters we handled, we identified that the people involved in these type of matters are the locals who are selling the products at small spaza shops and wholesalers, but also foreigners and then tobacco manufacturing. So in terms of the request we received, indicated to us that this is the people as the role players. This slide, on the left side of the slide, you will see the Financial Intelligence Center. The next row of blocks, that's the number of matters we work on for the financial years. And on the right side is the area that we worked in. So 2014-15, for instance, we received 39 requests from the law enforcement agencies to assist on matters that dealing with the illicit tobacco trade. So in total for the last or that lot, 3 financial years, close to 100 matters that we actually received a request from an investigating authority to assist them in terms of compiling or to collating financial intelligence around the investigation, and we disseminated the products then back to them in terms of the investigation. The bottom part of the slide indicates the number of matters we identified then based on reports received from financial institutions, matters that we then refer to law enforcement agencies for them to further investigate. I think the question would be, why is the number lower at the bottom part? Ultimately, it's very difficult for a financial institution to identify a person being involved in the illicit tobacco trade. But if you received a hint from the law enforcement agencies to say this specific person is involved in this specific industry, it helps us to better to focus our resources in terms of collating financial intelligence in our position to that investigation. We're working with agencies as listed on the slide. It's the South African Revenue Services, the Hawks, SSA, the State Security Agency, and then the Financial Surveillance Department of the Reserve Bank, that's dealing with the cross-border flow of funds, and then also the Asset Forfeiture Unit in terms of helping or assisting them for their process of getting preservation orders on some of these cases. This slide represents all of the cases that we dealt with, just to have an indication in terms of the numbers on illicit tobacco matters that we dealt with, in comparison with all of the different matters for the last 6 years. So it's just the number of requests received from law enforcement, close to 10,000, and then matters that we refer for further investigations to 5,000 matters. The way forward, we want to engage all stakeholders, including law enforcement, intelligence services, to counter the threat of organized crime, which include illicit tobacco trade. And I think it's important that there's enhanced information sharing, especially tax-related information. If we can get a proactive list of people involved in illicit tobacco trade, and we can run that through our database, we can be proactive in terms of identifying matters to refer to the revenue services. We want to strive to keep the domestic financial system free of abuse. We don't want these guys to use our financial system in South Africa. We want to contribute to the countering of the threat of money laundering and terror financing. We want to identify high priority matters that we can focus on them. I mean, we don't want to just push numbers, be more focused in terms of high priority matters where we can have the low hanging fruit and collect the higher number of taxes for the fiscus. We want to ensure that we do quality referrals to law enforcement and the relevant supervisory bodies. We want to improve our analytical capability, especially big data analytics. We want to gain access to more government data stores. This is just some of the examples, because ultimately it's about beneficial ownership. Who is the person behind a specific company or the specific trust that's dealing in illicit tobacco trade? And then we're going to require, as the director said, we want to require that law enforcement give us better feedback in terms of the value of our products, to customize and to improve the products that we disseminate for them for investigation. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you.
This is the first time you're appearing before this committee.
Yes, it's my first time. Yeah.
Appreciate that you're here, because it shows the commitment, at least symbolically, you know, at the very least, to addressing this issue. Okay, who's next? It's the Hawks, am I right? Good.
Morning, Chair, and honorable members. I am Major General Alfred Kana from the Director of Priority Crime Investigation. I'm also the head of serious commercial crime under whom this illicit tobacco trade resort investigation there too. Chair, let me just start off by saying that I've taken note with the reference, illicit tobacco trade. I must state up front that I have a slight problem with the reference to illicit tobacco trade, because in my view, this is not about tobacco trade. This is more to do with tax evasion, if one must be straight to it. There is trade, there's tobacco, cigarettes being sold. All this has to do with tax evasion. If one had a look at SARS presentation, this is all about tax evasion. But I'll carry on under the guise of illicit tobacco trade. Now, it says that illicit tobacco trade is defined as the production and importation, the export, purchase, sale, and possession of tobacco goods, which is categorized under three different categories. It's contraband, counterfeit, illicit, white, and cigarette smuggling. Now, if we go into the modus operandi followed by perpetrators, they smuggle it in. I've heard their counter arguments about the counterfeit nature. We have heard about it from the two different parties. And I have to add that upon me assuming this office of as the head of commercial crime 2015, there were meetings with TISA, where we were sitting and having these general meetings. Until I have thought at first the word TISA is a bit, because it says tobacco industry for South Africa. But I then came to understand that TISA actually is representing a certain sector of the tobacco industry. And there's a different sector who governs on the other side. And I then stopped this because I wanted all parties to be involved in this, because what we'll find that the bulk of the information comes is from one side giving information as to what happens on the other side. And when you speak to the other side, you get information speaking to what this side is doing or not doing, without me pointing fingers at anybody. But it has to do with trading in illicit tobacco, non-reporting of income, which I think is the gist of what we are here for today. Operating of legitimate businesses, using as a front to facilitate illicit trade from certain countries, without mentioning specific countries now, as I've been duly warned by the honorable member. But all I can say, Chair, I will just run through the presentation to say that we as the police are charged with the investigation of these type of investigations, crimes, dockets. We are facilitating, we start the self-generated type of cases that we have. We will get to the amount of cases that is later in the presentation. To say that when we do this, generate these cases, we do it on the basis of information that is received. We are taken to places, we are called. Certain vehicles, trucks, cars are stopped at certain border posts. Seizures are done, which ignites the investigation. The major player, in my view, or let me just go to the background to say that, how is this trade facilitated? I've just run through how it's been facilitated. The major player for me, Chair and honorable members, is I think if one looked at the question of tax evasion, it's a pity that the colleague from SARS, hopefully his other colleagues here have stepped up, that I think we need to, as a collective, look at how this phenomenon can be stopped. I've seen SARS reports, 1 billion that was collected. And if we hear TISA speaking and other, I don't know if Fitcher may have a different total, it's billions. And I do not know whether 1 billion collection would be proper. But if we look at the investigation side, and I think that is where the committee is more interested in, as to what are you doing about it, how many cases are there. And I think this picture, I do not know which slide it is, but it says, in total, Chair and honorable members, we have 394 cases for the 2017-2018 cases under investigation in terms of illicit tobacco trade. That's across the country, be it within the DPCI or SUPS environments, the detectives, because some matters are within the environment as well, prior to it being declared a priority crime, which is now solely being dealt with by the Hawks. And I think it's obvious that your main problem areas would be your Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga environment. Gauteng is basically where all the seizures are done, where the goods were found. Now, those four provinces that are highlighted is where the exit and entry points are situated. Those are where the borders are. And it's mostly seizures that were taking place in those areas, which is highlighted in red. And to a bigger extent, I think Mpumalanga became now orange because it is actually it came down a bit, but still the problem lies with being the borders being there. Now, when we look at the selling of this, what brings this about? How do we police it? I think from a policing perspective, it becomes problematic because the one area that you look at, I think it was said that the taxes that has to be paid per packet is 17 rand 45 or 65 cents. And it is true that you find in the shops it's being sold between 10 rand and 17 rand. Now, it's obvious that the police do not have the capacity or manpower to go into shops and check how much people are selling this for. And I think this is rather a situation where it should lie somewhere else. We are more than adequate to deal with the criminality, the criminal entities, the syndicates that are dealing with it. But I think it really asks for conversation to say, how are we going to deal with this? And the other thing that comes to play that one has to question is, I think the Department of Health, the only person in the Department of Health one hears speaking about cigarettes and the impact of is the minister, quite rightly. Other than the minister, nobody else is speaking about the cigarettes, what is lost and how it affects our health systems and that. And I think if one must ask, this cigarette that costs 7 rand, one should have asked if these cigarettes can it be tested to see whether these cigarettes are not harmful to the health of the general public or not. But that is not a question for me to ask here. I think rather the general public or we as a collective has to look into that. The next slide, Honourable Chair, speaks to the type of brands that one finds, that these brands are the brands that you'll find being sold 10 rand or less up to 15 rand per packet, whereas the actual amount to be collected by SARS should be, I'm saying SARS by the government per packet, is 17 rand. Hence, if one listen to, from what I'm saying here, Chair, trying to bring across is, if we can look at measures how to curb this, it would be to say that if I do not know the capacity SARS has to do audits, but one will have to understand that all these institutions, be it TISA or whoever they represent, FITA and who they represent, all these cigarette manufacturers, one will have to go and get an audit being done within those institutions as to how many cigarettes are being sold, how much money are these tobacco companies making genuine, and determine their tax liability from there. Because I think if one starts there, Honourable Chairperson, it will give us a better outlook as to how much cigarette is really being brought into the system through the borders from wherever it is being sold. If there are information about these countries that were mentioned, like Lesotho and Zimbabwe, being, where counterfeit cigarettes are apparently being manufactured and brought into the country, we are very interested to hear about that information. But I can honestly say that that information has never reached us for us to be acting upon it. And if it has been communicated, I would love to know to whom it was communicated so that we can really look into those institutions or those officers to whom it was reported, because I can say I do not know of any investigation pertaining to any counterfeiting that has been reported in these two countries being brought in South Africa. In short, I think the issue of the regulation, I think this cigarette industry needs to be regulated properly. And I think we need to really look at, my concern was, I mean, the colleague, the Honourable Mr. Van der Merwe stood here and he spoke about my industry. I do not know if the cigarette industry sees the type of ownership being taken by TISA. Sorry?
Do you think he knows what you think?
Because I think that's a wrong statement to make.
No,
if it says my state, my industry, my members. Well, I do not know which members are the gentlemen speaking about. And I think we just need to put that into clear perspective, because as the DPCI, we would gladly investigate any matter being reported under tax evasion. But I think we honestly, Chair, and I'm not trying to throw my SARS colleague under the bus, but I think it's time we have to come together. The problem that we have encountered is the uses of the protection under Section 4 of the SARS Act. that has become problematic for us, because this is tax offences. And Section 4 becomes, I have written a letter to the Law Reform Commission, myself, because of not only illicit tobacco, because as law enforcement we are expected to investigate. We cannot say to the public we have this problem with other government departments to give us information. But I think it becomes apparent that we maybe have to sit where we can honestly, I have tried to sit down and get meetings with certain SARS officials, but I've told that they are being restricted by the Act, in terms which was mentioned in Section 4, that they cannot discuss tax matters of individual taxpayers with others. Now this is tax evasion, which means you have to speak to them to say, this company, that company's tax affairs is relevant to my investigation. And we become unstuck. Maybe they are also unstuck, but I've written a letter to the Law Reform Commission saying, is this act maybe not the section, not being interpreted too literally or whatever? Give us guidance, since you guys may be the ones who created this act, so that we can move forward when we have to investigate, so that these properties can be brought to book. I think I should just end this. Thanks.
All right, Nick.
Thank you, Chair. May I sit here, or
no,
is that fine? Thank you. Good day, colleagues, and Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Malini Govender. I'm the Acting Special Director of the Specialised Commercial Crime Unit. With me today are my colleagues from the NPA that represent different sections that also deal with this area related to, and I'm going to talk about illicit trade as opposed to illicit tobacco trade, because I think we need to be dealing with a wider issue here than just the illicit tobacco trade. Next to me is Advocate Knox Molele, the Head of Operations of the Asset Forfeiture Unit. Behind me is Advocate Anthony Mosey, who is the National Coordinator for Organized Crime. And next to him is Organized Crime Prosecutions. And next to him is Advocate Johan van Heerden, representing our specialist tax components in the NPA. We welcome this opportunity to actually contribute to the discussions. And as I said, the aspect with regard to the illicit tobacco industry is but one facet of the broader illicit economy, which needs to be dealt with, having an impact on our fiscus. In respect of the illicit tobacco trade, we've heard various presentations that deal with the magnitude and the scale of the problem. We've accepted that the biggest drive behind the smuggling of cigarettes or the illicit tobacco trade is actually financial gain. The profit margins where this is concerned are very high, and as late as last year, you could actually do an internet search and find a box of, I don't want to mention the name of the brand, it's mentioned in my written address that I've given, but it's available for 6 rand. So obviously it's worth the while to actually use this, and impacts most greatly on our poorer communities. The analysis that we conducted and work that we've done showed that the financial loss to the fiscus of one truck with a fully loaded 40-foot container smuggled across the border amounts to a 10 million loss to the fiscus. I think that we also know that from the Deputy Minister of Police, the Honourable Member MMCO2, who at the Tobacco Institute of South Africa annual anti-illicit trade conference stated that South Africa ranks currently as one of the top 5 countries in the world with the highest incidence of trade of illicit cigarettes, together with Malaysia, Iraq, Brazil and Pakistan. If the trend is not tackled decisively, we continue to have an impact in a crisis where organized crime is concerned, a financial impact, but also a health impact. South Africa is regarded as a manufacturing hub, a point of distribution, and a nexus point for the smuggling into and from our neighboring countries. I think, therefore, that if we deal with this only as a fiscal problem, we actually ignore the wider issues that are at play where this is concerned. Regarding the NPA's role, we've been involved in the prosecution of illicit cigarette offenders since the inception of the NPA. The oldest case that we have was investigated in 2000, and the prosecution was instituted in 2003. Charges in this matter relate to racketeering, ghost exports, false claiming of VAT and other customs and excise offences involving an amount of 280 million. So this problem is an old problem. This case is still litigated upon in court with the property of the accused and the companies involved under restraint, a restraint order applied for by the High Court. So once again, the financial impact of these cases can be seen because it's often parties who have access to great sums of money that litigate and can litigate as long as it does, as we've seen in respect of this case. The NPA, as early as 2003, established specialized tax units in conjunction with SARS. These are based in our major centers of Pretoria, Johannesburg, Durban, and the Western Cape. This unit comprises dedicated prosecutors whose sole task is to deal with criminal matters affecting the revenue of the country. These four divisions also service the other provinces that do not necessarily have these tax units. Now, whilst the illicit tobacco trade matters are predominantly dealt with by the component in the NPA, and we use the following pieces of legislation in order to prosecute: our Customs and Excise Act, Section 78 for minor offences, 80 for serious offences, and 84 for statutory fraud. The Tobacco Products Control Act, Section 7, which relates to the sale and advertising of tobacco products in certain respects, and what is to be reflected on the packages, and for matters connected thereto. The Counterfeit Goods Act, Section 2 of the Act, which prohibits the manufacture, distribution, or dealing in counterfeit goods. And contrary to what has been said here, we see that there are some incidents of this being dealt with. And lastly, and most the important piece of our legislation, is actually our Prevention of Organized Crime Act, Section 2, racketeering, to deal with our more organized matters. 4, 5, and 6 that deals with money laundering to deal with the proceeds of the unlawful activity, and 5 and 6, which are the provisions, chapters 5 and 6, which are the provisions that our asset forfeiture unit uses to freeze and recover the proceeds of unlawful activity and the instrumentality of offences, for example, vehicles that are being used in order to transport these types of goods into our country. What we noticed was the cases related to illicit cigarettes reported to the NPA increased significantly during 2007 with a high point in 2011. These cases were reported countrywide. Most of the cases, however, emanated from our border areas. By way of the analysis, in 2011 for the North Gauteng Division, the division that Advocate Van Heerden represents, or is the head of, we found that for the province of Mpumalanga, we had 335 cases that were prosecuted in court with 178 convictions and sentences, 55 warrants of arrest were issued, and 34 cases were withdrawn. In the Limpopo province, we had 220 cases that were prosecuted in court involving 194 convictions and sentences, 14 warrants of arrest, and 7 cases that were withdrawn. However, there has been a steady reduction in the number of cases referred to the NPA. And this, when I talk about cases that referred to the NPA, it must be noted that the NPA is not responsible for the investigation or detection. What happens is that we are reliant on SARS as well as the police, the DPCR in these instances, to refer cases to us, which we then guide the investigation on and ultimately take into the prosecution realm. What we found in the year for 2017, by way of example, was that we had 124 cases that were referred to the NPA, of which 43 were finalized with a guilty outcome. Most of the other cases are being litigated upon, and my colleagues, Advocate Van Heerden and Mosing, can speak in greater detail if required on some of the cases that we have processed. Some of the challenges that we have noticed that have become evident through these cases are the following: the complexity of organized structures operating in this environment, cross-border involvement, foreign persons that are involved as the runners, cost of analysis, which is what is this product costing our economy. You often find that these matters are highly litigated upon with legal representation and defenses that arise as a result of, for example, the analysis of the product and proof that the product is in fact counterfeit, by way of example. And then ultimately an aspect that is impacting upon us greatly as a result of the fact of the foreign element that is prevalent in these types of offenses is abscondment of accused persons and legal processes involving extradition insofar as fiscal offences are concerned. The asset forfeiture unit has also played a significant role to address the proceeds or instrumentality of the offence by inter alia obtaining restraint orders to the value of 70 million, preservation orders of property to the value of in excess of 5 million, forfeiture orders to the value of in excess of 600,000. My colleague, Advocate Molele, can provide more detail on these cases and what is required. The role of organized crime in this area is one that the NPA has also dealt with our most significant case emanating from the Western Cape in the State versus De Vries and others, where accused were successfully charged with racketeering and money laundering in relation to the hijacking of consignments of cigarettes and smuggling thereof. Thereafter, this case resulted in periods of imprisonment from 10 to 25 years. The NPA sits at a very central point in respect of the criminal justice system. As I stated, we are responsible for the guiding of investigations, especially complex matters, the presentation of matters before court, and as such, we are able to look at some of the best practices, but also identify some of the challenges which have impacted on our collective ability to effectively deal with the illicit trade, not just in respect of tobacco, but the illicit trade in general. One of the aspects that I think needs us to require greater engagement where this issue is concerned is the transnational nature of this crime. The information made available indicates that this is a transnational problem, with our country being considered both a manufacturer, a market, and a transit destination, impacting not just on us but also our neighboring countries. The porous nature of our borders and the element of corruption to allow consignments to pass are factors which act as enablers, requiring us not only to partner effectively domestically but also with our counterparts in neighboring countries. Efforts are underway through SMLAG to determine the scale of the problem through a typology study specifically focusing on the illicit tobacco industry, money laundering, and to understand the better challenges but also to look at best practices that should be adopted by various countries to ensure that this becomes more difficult to perpetrate. And I think that South Africa is leading this in respect, and these efforts are led by FIC and the DPCI. It, however, requires us more effectively to engage with our counterparts, both from a SARS perspective, but also a law enforcement, policing perspective, to ensure that, to prevent consignments from crossing our borders and sharing information with us that allows us to intercept such consignments. The organized crime aspect of this, the complexity of the structures to produce and move the product as well as disguise the proceeds require that the organized crime element be more effectively addressed. And I think that this requires a prioritization of the crime type and collaboration with our criminal justice sector to more effectively address, which is something that we've not really spoken about within this environment but requires greater talk outside of this room. From the NPA's point, the DPCI is ideally placed to deal with this as the Operations Committee as contemplated in Section 17J of the SAPS Act of 1996 is a structure within which illicit trade and the interventions that need to be put in place, the manner in which we address the organized crime element and high-level fiscal offences can be dealt with. And this is something that the NPA has advocated the institution of since last year, whereby the head of the NPA has written to the head of the DPCI to see how best we can deal with crime typologies of this nature. Interdepartmental collaboration. I mean, we've all spoken in this space how we need to improve on this. The role of the DPCI is central to addressing this, and I think we need interdepartmental cooperation to formulate an effective strategy to addressing illicit trade involving SAPS DPCI, crime intelligence, border policing, SARS Customs, the K9 unit, the SANDF, the NPA's tax unit, as well as AFU, and I also mentioned the Department of Home Affairs, because critical to this is also the factor that there is a foreign element that is prevalent, our counterparts in FIC. I think we also need to ensure that the process that we adopt is a multi-tiered approach. It's not just a law enforcement issue. We need to recognize, as has been identified, that this impacts on the fiscus. So the use of civil penalties involving smaller consignments and where foreigners are involved, Section 91 of the Act, has been very effectively used in the Western Cape to obtain redress in the smaller amounts and where foreigners are involved in order not to take those persons through the court system because of the impact of those cases not being finalized by the accused persons. Abscond was an aspect that was recognized as revealing some benefits and bringing some monies back into the fiscus. But what we need is better collaboration with the Department of Home Affairs to effectively ensure that these foreigners do not re-enter our borders and continue to perpetrate these offenses. We needed the establishment of a joint operational committee on the illicit trade in tobacco products. We saw this in respect of two working groups that were established by the North Gauteng, and our colleague Advocate Van Heerden has been instrumental from the NPA's part in dealing with this and working through this. The Komachi Port Tobacco Enforcement Group and the Ermelo Tobacco Enforcement Group to improve the multidisciplinary cooperation servicing the Mpumalanga border post. And this to a large extent contributed to the high numbers of cases that we are currently seeing in our system that actually emanate from that area. We need to look at the identification of organized crime and of corrupt officials for the purposes of prioritization of investigations and prosecutions, the identification of the modus operandi and addressing of specific joint operations, better information sharing, and joint target setting. Now, I mentioned joint target setting because many of us sitting in this room have different objectives. SAPS may have the objective of dealing with the rest as a target in terms of their operations. We've got SARS who are looking at revenue collection. And then from our side, we are based on obtaining convictions and the finalized cases. Somewhere within all of this, we need to meet so that we are focusing on the right type of cases, but we do not allow, for example, aspects that relate to the fiscus to overwhelm the crime picture where this is concerned. So the balance needs to be structured. We need greater collaboration where that is concerned in order to ensure that. The NPA has started some work in this regard with our role players that are in this room. We work firstly closely with the DPCI and SARS by providing the dedicated capacity in tax, organized crime, and commercial crime cases, which traverses all areas of illicit trade. We have looked at finalizing memorandum of understanding to improve our cooperation, specifically with SARS. This endeavors to deal with issues of collaboration, joint target setting, operations in joint priority focus areas together with the DPCI, but also to deal with what has been mentioned by my colleague from the DPCI, the issues around the secrecy provisions, which may at the end of the day have impact adversely on our collective ability to deal with crime more effectively. Equally so, we are looking at a memorandum of understanding with FIC to also see where it is that we can jointly collaborate around particular areas that are priority focuses for government and our country. The private sector engagement is critical, and I think that one of the challenges that we've had has emanated in this room. There are various bodies representing the private sector and not a common voice. We believe very strongly that we do not have a body within government that regulates the industry and performs the overarching responsibility and role of coordination with the private sector. We've seen the successes that there has been with regard to the liquor board under the DTI, and I think that our colleague from National Treasury spoke about the fact that you do not have the same challenges with excise where liquor products are concerned as it is that you are having where the tobacco products are concerned. I think that this is such a body is necessary not only to address the fiscal but also the health aspect in order to ensure that the partnership with regard to the law enforcement and government is more effectively managed. The benefit of such a structured engagement with the role players with the CJS will enhance the following: the traceability of the origin of goods, the calculation of the risk relating to the rate of duty, that's the free onboard value, a market analysis on illicit trends, expert evidence in counterfeit cases, training and capacitating officials to recognize illicit products, and also will remove the type of disjuncture that we see emanating within the private sector. In conclusion, I think that it's necessary for there to be a broader engagement led by government on the nature, extent, and the impact of the illicit trade. Structured engagements with the private sector in a coordinated manner in order to ensure that there's effective regulation and collaboration is required, and it is suggested that a regulatory body created by the state, similar to the Liquor Board, to lead this process to deal with cross-cutting issues is one that we should look at. The best practices of joint collaboration within the criminal justice sector to address high-level financial crime through the dedication of resources, joint target setting, and joint operations should be used as a method to effectively address the areas of organized crime, corruption, and subversion of the tax systems to address illicit trade and illicit tobacco products as an example thereof. Thank you. Unless my colleagues want to add anything else.
Yeah, do you
want to
add anything? No, good. All right, so then over to members. Just to say also, within parties and across parties, people have strong views about the NDPP, and that's fine. But I must tell you, just to be fair, I found him 20 minutes later. He came back to me. This is on Thursday afternoon. Within, I think, 45 minutes, he'd sent through to Alan the four people that are here. And then he wrote a letter which basically said he commits the NPA to doing whatever they can. I did speak about illicit financial flows, by the way, and our despair and so on, but also the quality of the inputs we're getting from the NPA, which are very coherent and so on, although we don't judge according to the quality of the verbal input, but action. So I just want to thank the NDPP. Will you convey our committee's appreciation, unless somebody has a problem? We're dealing now with swift turnaround time. Good. Advocate Tobias Pokola.
I am going to be one, don't worry. When I leave Parliament, I'm going to study this. Chair, first I need to say I'm vindicated because I raised the issue of illicit tobacco trade in 2014 when I came to this committee as a matter that needs attention. So the fact that today in this room we've got so many people having to deal with this issue, to me it's a vindication. However, I must say up front that I'm a little bit perturbed in how we still structure the whole discussion and how we should approach it, and I'll show you what I'm talking about. But also I'll be a little bit conflicted in that I used to be in trade and industry, and I used to lead an anti-piracy campaign, and part of it was dealing with issues of counterfeiting. So when I listen to you speaking in parables, I get sad because I dealt with this issue. I initiated it. It was one of my babies to deal with counterfeit products. And I want to start with comments first, Chair, so that General Khanna and everybody should understand sometimes how the industry that is part of counterfeit and illicit is working. You see, it's not only things that comes through the borders that are counterfeit products. We should also know that internal manufacturers will manufacture counterfeit products. They will have a professional face, the front desk, and they will have the back desk, and you they will not report about their back desk. They will only say to you, "Are doing it the right way? We look at us and look at other people. Other people are wrong." Now, that's why there should be a differentiation between, and that's why I agree with General Khanna. We must differentiate between what is counterfeit, what is illicit, because the meanings and the impacts are not the same, so that we know what we want to deal and eradicate. Because when I was looking at the list of things that were shown on the screen, for instance, I didn't know the majority of the cigarettes, but I was able to identify Cohiba, which is a Cuban product. Now, you can't say it is a counterfeit. It might came in an illicit manner through the borders of South Africa. Now, that's why I'm saying let's make the distinction, because the distinction is going to assist us to understand what we're... So, in competition also, and I said I want to start with comments, in competition, actually, we should not confuse what can be termed by your competitors as illicit when it's not illicit. It is a question of whether are you my competition, are you my rival, and therefore I don't want you to exist or not. We must make that comparison and distinction. And I'm not implying anything in the current conjuncture in this discussion. I'm saying those things are there. I dealt with them in my previous life, and I know how people who were competing against each other will sabotage each other so that they can thrive. Let's go to the issues also, that, and I'm still lamenting, Chair. The other thing, I realize that we want to pit ministers and committees against one another in terms of regulations and legislation, and it shouldn't be the case. If there's an issue that it is believed that the Department of Health has not addressed adequately, make a suggestion to us so that we can take it to them. But we can't speak with authority on health matters when we are not experts on the health environment. Because then we will be getting to a space that we cannot account for. We can only account as far as finances are concerned. So if the Department of Health decides to put regulations, whether it's standards, whether it's about, for instance, I was listening to somebody speaking about plain packaging. I know where it comes from. For instance, if you go to Cuba, you will not get a situation where marketing is allowed. And there's reasons. It's to avert a situation where there's unfair competition. So maybe the Minister of Health come from that background. So I can't speak on his behalf. I don't want us to get into that space. But also, General Kana, you see, if the FIC think that they will be able to identify laundered money, good luck. Because laundered money does not go through a bank. It goes somewhere else. So good luck if you think you can only take cases to the hawks that you were able to financially intelligently so identify. You will not be able to identify them. And I always say, let's not make a mockery. These people are serious criminals. They don't, they are way above your systems. They understand your systems very well. They know how you can catch them, so they don't want you to catch them. So they're going to play very clever. And in relation to tax evasion, tax evasions are not done by small syndicates who are practicing to sell to get 1 million rand and so on. These are serious people who have dealt with money. They know what is tax, how to declare and so on. It's people who deliberately avoid to declare. And they are going to distract you from getting them and showing you the small fries, you see. And say, no, we are not the ones, these ones. And you catch some upcoming young men there who are trying to make business, who doesn't understand the South African tax laws, and you pay much attention on them and miss the ones who are making big bucks because they've directed them to you. And I'm happy, General Kana, when you say you are not going to do joint operations of any sort, including SARS, where you deal with people and say, come, we can show you this people, and you don't do it yourself with So it's good that you do it on your own and you do it differently. But I'm worried about the Border Management Authority. I lost that debate and I'll keep on raising it. And the reason why I'll keep on raising it, I still believe that the Border Management Authority belongs in SARS. I've lost it politically and elsewhere. But I'll keep on saying that because the hawks are here and NPA want to convince you to go and remove the Border Management Authority from where you have placed it and bring it back here where there's expertise in terms of excise duties and customs. Because once you create a disjuncture of operations, you will not be able to account in full of what is illicit and so on. We've created that thing. So let's go back and clean our own mess in terms of what we have done. The Chair, you see this thing of price can be manipulated in many different ways. Big business can manipulate price. That's why we've got what we call, let me remember this English word, now nobody will be able to hear me what I say. Price fixing. Price fixing is a problem in South Africa. That's why the Competition Commission is very busy. Because at some, and I'm not, I said I'm not implying anything. I'm just bringing issues for consideration because there's investigators and these intelligent people here. They will help us to think. You see, in relation to price fixing, if people are worried that you are going to bring a product at a lower price and you are going to disturb their profit, they are going to be very worried. And they are going to act in a particular way towards you. They are not going to be very happy. And I'm not saying it's happening in the current conjuncture in South Africa, but I'm saying competition, those are the rules. Big labels, they fix price. If you come with a similar product and you want to sell it for a lesser price, they make sure that you don't exist. But equally, we are saying, don't come into an industry and not prepared to learn and do the things the right way. Don't come into any industry and not want to adhere to the rules and the laws. But equally, you see, Chair, I we're still going to meet the AG. I said, there's a difference between when you charge KPMG that has existed for more than 50 years committing fraud, and there's a difference when you charge Thandi Tobias Pokolo and associates who just existed for 6 months and still doesn't know that certain things cannot be done. So when you charge KPMG, you're going to give them a hefty fine. When you charge this new one, you make sure that they self-correct so that they don't create the same mistake again. So there must always be a difference on how we deal with those who knows what they are doing and those who sometimes find themselves not understanding what they are doing. I'm trying to round up. In relation to the Tax Administration Act, maybe we should allow SARS to explain itself in terms of the secrecy clause, because I understood the secrecy clause not to suggest that there must be an impediment to investigations. Maybe the interpretation of that clause is a problem. I'm not sure. Because I thought, General Akana, you people go to the judge, you say, I suspect Thandi Tobias is a criminal, we want to surveil her, all sorts of things, and you are given something that allows you to do that. You go and check my bank accounts, you check my tax matters, you check my everything. But if it's not allowed, then the interpretation of the legislation, then it's a problem, or the legislation itself is an impediment, then it will have to be looked. But I also liked this suggestion from Mr. Panameva that we need to put custom officials in all factories. All factories, including the underground factories, not only these ones in front, okay? We must get them to go in all these factories so that and then we sign the pacts and the treaties with other countries to come and search their factories also and so on. So there's quite a lot of work. I don't know who's going to pay for that. I don't want to be involved. But that's the type of work that's going to get into the space. I'm trying to check whether... I know, but I thought I was giving... Okay, let me pause. Then I'll come back and give other people an opportunity.
Anybody else wants to raise any? Mr. Mania and Gwen.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, it's clear, particularly from National Treasury's presentation, that there is a problem and that the primary problem is an enforcement problem. Part of the enforcement problem, it is evident from the presentations, is a coordination problem between the various enforcement authorities. And let me say that that is unlikely to have arisen had this, an institution like the Scorpions, which used a joint approach to investigation and prosecution, had the Scorpions been disbanded. So I would be interested to hear from the NPA whether they think that the re-establishment of an institution like the Scorpions, which used a joined approach to investigation and prosecution, might assist in the combating of illicit flows in SA. That's the first question. The other part of the enforcement problem is a capacity problem.
So I would like to ask SARS whether they could spell out the number of personnel they have dedicated to combating the illicit flow in tobacco, the annual budget approximately that they allocate to combating the illicit flow in tobacco, and then the constraints on effective law enforcement from them. What specifically are the constraints from SARS' perspective? And then finally, Chair, I want to deal with the elephant in the room and the missing aspect to all the presentations. It would strike me that in order to effectively combat the illicit trade, and particularly to investigate and finally prosecute the kingpins in this trade, one would require an effective intelligence capacity. So my question to SARS is, does SARS have an intelligence capacity? And if it does, could it describe the capacity that it has? If it does not have an intelligence capacity, then could SARS describe how indeed or who is responsible for gathering and coordinating intelligence on the illicit trade in tobacco in SA? Thank you.
My questions, I suppose, mostly deal with the fact that it seems that there isn't really a meeting of the minds around some essential facts in this debate between all those who have presented, and it seems a lot has been relegated almost to the level of opinion. And I'll go through some of those areas, and maybe some of you will respond and say, actually, no, this is not opinion, these are the facts. So, for example, just purely even on definitions, so some have spoken of counterfeit products being a type of illicit good, and some seek to draw a distinction between illicit products and counterfeit products. So is there scope here for even disagreements around the definitions of some of these terms, or is someone just plainly wrong and there's actually agreed upon definitions, or what is the scope for disagreement here? And then also in terms of what the real problems are in terms of the revenue that is being diverted from SARS. So I think it was Peter who mentioned that the focus on the illicit tobacco trade is perhaps unfounded, and that there are other areas that should be the focus for Treasury and SARS. Again, this to me doesn't seem like something that should be a matter of opinion. Surely there has been some study as to where the bleed is likely to be the most, and to then for us, and then for to have those numbers presented. Of course, with any sort of illegal or illicit or activity, these will likely just be estimates of where the major problem lies. But I'd hope that those kind of estimates at some point has been made by some kind of body, and so it shouldn't really be an opinion. What are the most serious challenges in terms of diversion of revenue in the tobacco industry? We should have a clear sense of where the main areas of the bleed are. Instead, what we have received is the scale of the illicit tobacco trade problem, but I think what I'm asking for is, can we see a comparative scale of the problem? What is the size of this problem as compared to perhaps other areas, as Vita is suggesting? Then next is, if we just focus now on illicit trade, so I think it was the TISA presentation that highlighted that there's counterfeit, non-compliant, duty not paid goods, etc., and that really the issue in TISA's opinion lies in the fact that the duty is not paid. Again, I would like to ask, is there no hard data on this, so there shouldn't really be an argument about whether counterfeit goods are the most problematic, whether it's non-compliant goods, duty not paid. Again, this should just be the matter of, here are the studies and these are the problem areas, whereas again there seems to be a perception by, I think, FITA that all the problem is being placed on duty being not being paid, and that not enough attention perhaps is being placed on counterfeit goods, which are part of the problem, not just the illicit tobacco trade. Then in terms of some of the strategies that have been suggested, I'd just like to speak to minimum pricing. Does the strategy succeed, especially in terms of the data that has been presented to us, that most of this trade occurs in informal settings? So one in where consumers have absolutely no incentive to report. I don't understand why, if you set minimum prices and even if you have some kind of public awareness campaign, why would a consumer who benefits from a lower price have any incentive to report that lower price? And then secondly, those shops usually in informal, that kind of informal trade, the prices are communicated verbally. So even if there is a minimum price, they're unlikely, well, I know you've provided some pictures where they do, but I'd imagine that in most instances, those prices won't necessarily be publicly displayed. Someone would merely ask for a particular box of cigarettes, and the shopkeeper or whoever's the teller would then inform them how much it is. So I'm just wondering to what extent this minimum pricing strategy actually works, considering that consumers have no incentive to report on a price that benefits them, and that also the shopkeeper is unlikely to publicise that price. And then the suggestion in terms of having customs offices and manufacturing plants, this is not something, I mean, obviously the suggestion just came off the floor, so this is not a DA or party position, just mine, that I would exercise caution in doing that. I think this is quite a heavy-handed approach to have customs offices present at all manufacturing plants. And I think if we think of business in general, this might set a precedent for preemptive government presence in any business where you might, you know, where we might say that this kind of problem exists in the sector, therefore we're going to have government officials or anyone permanently based in your business in case you ever infringe. I mean, that's entirely absurd. I think you must deal with the crime once it's committed and not have a permanent presence in case someone does do something wrong. Then in terms of tracing and tracking, as I understand it, the purpose here is to ensure that the inputs match the outputs and that the number of cigarettes produced matches those that are then released into the market. First, my question here is, you know, where do exports come in there? Because obviously the outcomes, not the products of those inputs is not necessarily intended for the domestic market. Isn't there then an arbitrage opportunity perhaps by declaring some goods as being meant for export, but then not actually, in the end exporting them and instead releasing them in domestic markets? How does the tracing and tracking ensure that goods marked for export are indeed in fact exported? Then just lastly, I think everyone mentioned that there's going to be some kind of forum where all the various stakeholders talk. But, you know, this just sounds like talks about talks, and I didn't really understand from any presenter as to what is the challenge or obstacle in actually setting up this forum. So everyone talks that there is a need for one, and we think everyone's agreed there, but what has been the challenge of setting it up? That's all from me.
Firstly, I just wanted to ask, there's a figure of $5 billion mentioned, right, by TISA. Now, by its very nature, these activities are difficult to pin down, right? It same applies to illicit financial flows. But is there a consensual figure, a banned figure? Like, on the continent, it's said that it's between 50 and 80 billion that is lost each year through illicit financial flows. So is there a band ballpark figure, say between 5 and 10 billion or 10 and 15 billion? Surely you've had some interdepartmental coordination where this figure is looked at. Then secondly, the same thing struck me as Glenn, that actually, the way it comes across. Now, I agreed with most of the things that you said. It doesn't matter which party you come from. Contrary to what you might think, when, at least while I'm chairing, it doesn't matter to me which party you come from, right? You can come from the AWB if you're here as a member of parliament, and you say something valid. What am I supposed to say? So anyway, I'm a chair. Unlike Tandi, who's a whip, she's a political commissar. I have to chair. Never mind what your colleagues might think of me. I abide by the rules. And I hope others do too. So basically, I want to say that, I don't know whether we're talking about the same thing. Funny, it's the same thing that struck me, that Gwen is saying. In fact, it's here in a different way, but I think she put it far more clearly, right? So the other thing I wanted to ask you is the ballpark figure. Then I want to say we are among the top five, comrades, colleagues, top five. No one's questioning that. Why are you questioning that? If it's the case, I mean, really. Okay? Now, more than ever, we need that money. You can't introduce an increase in VAT, and then we're not getting this money that's due to us. You know, illicit financial flows, ITTs, I think it should be the theme for the next 5 years as we exit. So can I plead also with MPs, can we please, before we end, have a program? Yeah, fine, you can come back. But now we're going to focus on program. What are we going to do over the next 6 years? We cannot prescribe to the new committee, but in our exit report we'll say we would ask the new committee, some of you will be here, kindly consider the following, right? Now look, even if I come back to Parliament, I ain't coming here over my dead body, okay? I'm not coming here. This time I'm going to tell them, no, I'm interested in being a backbencher. I can't choose my committee, I'm not asking to be a chair, but I'm not coming back here. That's declared, right, really. So basically, the media is here, please, I withdraw that. It's not an official statement. It's not what a comrade would say. You know, Solon Mashlangu gave his life, so if they ask me to chair this committee, much to the annoyance of Mr. Mania and my annoyance equally, what can I do, right? But there are things. I'm 62 now, Tandy. I have ways and means, right? So, anyway.
Chair, just on a lighter note, if anybody is writing a story, we're very happy to write a letter to the chief editor.
Recommending, yeah. No, the last time you guys recommended me to stay, I got fired. That's good. Yeah. So, anyway, look, I want to tell Tisa and Fita. You see, our brilliant research team had no time. Can I just say, by the way, Tandy, you can say what you like, but this time I'm not complaining that I did about 3 to 4 hours of work over the phone, and I type all that stuff, as you know. This time you can't ask the committee secretaries to ring people on a Thursday afternoon? Who did I ring first? I tried Hawks first, actually. I targeted you first, right? And asked the PAs, like secretaries, to ring people like Advocate Kanyele and, you know, the head of the Hawks. No, I did it, right? And the thing is that strikes me is Tisa and Fita, I was going to do some research on them. And I felt it's unfair on our overworked team here. Right? I couldn't impose on Zakele and Antonia to do the work. So now we are mandating you, right? By the time we come back in the middle, can you do some work on both these organizations? Now, this is what I hear in the public domain. And I did some phone calling last night. So firstly, to Tisa, from what I'm told, your members are also doing the same thing. Illicit tobacco trade, right? Certainly, the accusations are against BAT. Remember, I am saying the accusations are against BAT. Advocate Pakola will have to accept it's my right to say that. It's BAT is your member, Tisa, right? Now, on the side of FITA, it is alleged that FITA harbors small emerging entrepreneurs, and, you know, that will warm our hearts, okay? But at the same time, TISA is apparently harboring certain very well-known names who are serial transgressors, allegedly. We don't know why they're walking up and down without facing trial. Some of them have faced trial. Some of them were on page one of the Sunday Times recently and so on. It is alleged they are your members. So, you know, for me, you're dealing with a 63-year-old socialist, right? Now, myself, I believe very importantly in African leadership and African empowerment, and then more generally black empowerment, but not if people are doing things wrong. Whether you green, pink, yellow, or white, or black, you just must face the music. So Tisa, I spoke to 3 people. They all tell me both of you are guilty, but you primarily. You may want to respond to that. I mean, I'm sure, I'm not saying Fita, anything to you haven't heard. There's countless books written, right? Then Sas, you're accused of being complicit. Where's SARS? Where are they? Yeah, you're accused of being complicit, that you turn a blind eye. Because, in theory, it is said, you must respond to these things in Parliament because these are things that may be wrong about you. I'm not saying it's true. I'm not a forensic investigator, nor is it my job. But I did some Googling last night. Oh, how wonderful this Google is, eh? And it's quick. And really, what I pick up is the accusations that some of you are paid functionaries of some of these wrongdoers, right? And you must answer because you are answerable to Parliament, right? So on the issue of forming one organization, that's not our responsibility. We always urge one organization, right? But now if you've got such claim diametrically opposed interests, our researchers will look at you and I'm sure there'll be a profile of each of you, right? We will comment on that sometime down the road. The question is, are you agreeing you're not cooperating enough? Once again, Tandy, I'm struck by this. People come to Parliament, and suddenly they have this urge the night before they come to Parliament to cooperate. Then when we meet them 6 months later, they have this urge to cooperate again. Now, what is it? Why do you have to come to Parliament for us to prod and nudge you? Now, let me tell you, colleagues, I have written thrice to two ministers that we want them, and let me remind you, people don't read what they commit themselves to. They forget. In the recommendations, Akela, didn't we say it twice? We want a single interministerial committee. We even said that it's not for Parliament to prescribe, but it strongly suggests the President considers. So where is that interministerial committee? Now, here it is on the illicit tobacco trade. Maybe you can't create another one. It's the same committee must function. So I will raise it once again with Comrade Nene. Hopefully I'll see him in an hour or so, right? Let's put it on the agenda that actually we want such a thing. But then the committee must have the capacity to hold this interministerial committee to account. How do we bring forward the five committees that are affected? I can tell you now we are battling, absolutely battling after last week's mandate to get the carbon tax committee to meet with us, the environment committee, right? Because we're dropping the VAT now after this. In last week, we're going to substitute carbon tax. It's very hard to get them to meet. Up to today, we're battling, right? So how are we going to get these committees to meet? But in the meanwhile, we'll do our job. Can I suggest one concrete proposal? Right. The first proposal I've got is in the quarterly reports that we get from National Treasury and SARS, we must insert in not just IFFs, but ITTs. Okay? The first thing. The second thing is we would like a report from National Treasury. Speak to the DG. And Paul, that you actually ensure that this interministerial committee takes place. Right? We want a reply at the next quarterly meeting. Thirdly, we are saying that, can you please explain to us what NEDLAC's role it is in this thing? You said so. Four is, you're asking about need for regulations. What regulations? From what we can tell, within the current dispensation, legal dispensation, you can do far, far more. But if you want our committee to help you, we can assist in that regard. But it may involve also approaching other committees and other ministers. So can you, within 10 days, those of you who said you want more regulations, tell us what it is you want done, and then we will refer it to the relevant minister and committees. On the matter of cooperating with neighboring countries, I don't think it's a problem. I don't think Tandy meant you can't mention the countries, my brother. She was referring to individuals attacking each other. Because the countries themselves have vested interest, presumably, in stopping this thing, because their own citizens are being affected, right? So why can't something more be done? Tandy or I will raise a comrade Rob Davies, right? SADC and so on. What are they doing about this? Then, yes, somebody asked, I think it was Mr. Mania, you know, what intelligence capacity have you got? And why are you not sharing this information more? Then the next issue is, okay, I've got a lot more issues, but I'll drop them. What I really want is, from the MPs in particular, some direction on a program, bearing in mind that at most we will see you once again before the elections. Right? So we'll try to meet you before November, but otherwise early in the new year. But we want action between now and then. Essentially, what are we saying? We're saying we want you to get the revenue SARS that is due to you, not due to the people of this country. We are saying that we understand you can't do it alone, but you need, through Treasury, to do more because it's in your own interest, because of the revenue shortfalls, to ensure that the minister that you account to actually ensures that he gets his fellow ministers to work on this, right? Secondly, we want the criminal justice system to put some people in jail. Why is it these people are walking up and down the streets? You know, like, you know, what's the word? I can't find the correct English word, right? I mean, like, Linda is a wordsmith, right? What's the word? Like, defiantly, what's the word? There's another... impunity, some stronger word. Yeah, yeah, I speak English, but I'm looking for wordsmith. Now, what's the word contempt, disdain? It is an embarrassment on all of us, Parliament no less, that these people walk around, serial transgressors. Now, we can't have that. So we can't deliver very much, but within the next 9 months, we'll call you back, and that's that. We don't want long discussions, eh? We want action. So, can members now suggest a program? Can Zakhele type it up? And that's our program. No heavy intellectual, it's not an academic seminar, yeah? Let's move. Right, Tandi, on action.
Yes. Chair, actually 9 months is long because I'm starting to be disillusioned. There are cases that has been referred by the FIC to the Hawks that needed to be investigated. We were promised that we will get a report on how far are they with those cases. The progress report that we want in terms of program is that when we meet in the next meeting, we need to be told that case one is at the prosecution stage, case two is at an investigation stage, case three and so on. Because then we will know that we have unlocked what we need to unlock, the frustration that the FIC had about raising alarm and those matters that are not their purview, had not having been dealt by the relevant structures. And the NPA makes it very clear that they are only dealing with the prosecution part when cases are referred to them. So they might as well be awaiting for those things to come. So, General Khan, we need to go back to the recommendations we made. When we come back, we get straight to feedback. And in relation to SARS Chair, it will then tell us how much it has collected on the basis of that, because the proprietor, what do you call it, asset proprietor unit, will have taken back and then they will put value and then, so within these 6 months, we will get the report. In the next 3 months, then we will put monetary value to it. That's my concrete suggestion.
All right, fine, we'll look into that, right? Basically, look, we've got 40 minutes, we've got 5 minutes just to look at the program to take a decision on for next week and so on. Now, can I ask you a very quick thing to the NPA? From the Justice Committee side in 2007 to 2009, as far as I know, nothing stops you from operating exactly as the Scorpions did. What stops you in the Act? The only difference, as I remember, as I said in Parliament or wherever in the public domain, was that you will not be sharing the same building. But prosecution-driven investigations are what the Hawks should be doing. So let's not bring up issues with due respect to everybody, or no due respect to everybody. That has got nothing to do with the issue. Nothing stops you, as I know. I was chair of that committee. Nothing stops you from doing prosecution-driven investigations. All that the Act did, the new Act, was it separated the building. We said, don't be in the same building because of the politically complex nature. So the Hawks are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and the NPA are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Who stops you from prosecution-driven investigations? Where in the Hawks Act? What's it called? The Police Act that Maggie Sochu chaired, right?
Chair, I was part of the committee that reviewed the NPA Act in relation to their powers and the things they could do at that time when Advocate Mushwana presented. So that's why they need to await the Hawks to give them the presentation.
Yeah, what's wrong? The problem isn't that the law stops you from working together. You're not working maybe enough together. That's all. Right. So can we move on? And can you also, in responding to the questions, focus primarily on those ones that relate to what action you are taking? Yeah. Let's start with the statutory bodies. Right, who wants to start? In the order you appeared, maybe that's the best thing. Let's start with the statutory bodies. We'll come back to TISA, and you're not directly accountable to Parliament. The ones that are directly accountable to Parliament, start with National Treasury. Or maybe National Treasury will come in at the end, because you meant to coordinate to the extent you can. Right, who was after National Treasury? Where's the program, Alan? SARS. SARS, let's start with you. Where are you, my friend? It's William. Where are you, my brother?
Thank you, sir.
I can't see you. All right, it doesn't matter, but I can see you as long as I hear you, right, wherever you are.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Each of you has got about 5 to 7 minutes.
Thank you. So I omitted to introduce the team that I'm with. I'm with Peter Posthumous on my left. I'm with Sidwell Kokani. Peter Posthumous works with criminal case election. Mr. Pukani works with customs operations, and Mr. Mueng on the far right works with customs investigations. So they will interchangeably take some of the questions that were raised. And Mamiki on the other side of the room. Mamiki deals with research into tax matters and customs matters as such. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson in the House, and thank you for the opportunity once more to appear before you. We take it as a privilege for us to actually respond to members of parliament. And I think I have to start with by indicating that as SARS, we have not actually been woken up from our slumber. We have always been putting our fingers on the illicit tobacco and cigarette, as alluded to by the two associations that have spoken before us, that is TISA and FITA. And we are indeed working in collaboration with the two associations to try and find each other to deal with the mammoth task that is in front of us. And I have to start off before going to the questions that were asked by the Mayor Tobias to indicate that as SARS we do have what we call a compliance program. And that particular compliance program comprises of, amongst others, tobacco and cigarette, which is top of the agenda. And it has been our focus area for quite a long time. Clothing and textile is one of them. Construction is one of them. High net worth individuals is one of them. So if you look at all of these particular industries, they are interlinked in terms of the manner in which they operate and so on, and the risks that are inherent in those particular industries. And the resources that we utilize are spread across these different industries that we are focusing on. So in terms of the question that was, the first question that was coming from Metro Bias in the number of personnel dealing with illicit trade, I have to indicate that we use all of the SARS approach, all of the SARS approach is a term that we utilize in terms of the strategy of addressing non-compliance. So we do not have a specific area that we say that these people are actually specializing in tobacco and cigarette, but we pool our resources in different areas as they deal with different regimes that we find in our area, from customs, from tax perspective, from excise and so on. So in most cases we put together the teams that focus on a specific project that we are working on and so on. And as one of the TISA member, Mr. Van Berve, indicated during the Honey Badger project, we pull together all the resources from criminal investigations to risk management and case selection. All of the people are coming in together. So the resources come in and out of the project as and when we go. So the number of resources may not necessarily be valid that we can give to you. And the approach that we take, and that actually will assist our HOCS colleagues, is the comprehensive approach that deals with education, service, as well as enforcement. So we don't only focus on the enforcement part of the wing. So we deal with education, we engage with regard to issues relating to service, and then ensure that we enforce responsibly. And then we work together with other government departments on a regular basis. And I think if the question may come, and then it needs to be answered, is that can we actually increase our efforts in terms of working together with other government departments? And the answer is yes, we are willing to do that. If the parliament will have to put us on a task to come together as a different government departments that are working on this thing in the next 9 months, as it was alluded earlier, to say, do we have a plan? Or how far are we with a plan that we can put together as different government departments to work together? We will gladly have to engage amongst ourselves to ensure that that particular plan is going to be put in front of you to tackle this problem. If that is the outcome that will actually come out of the engagement that you are going to have, we are ready to do that. So the service, when we look at the issue of the budget allocated to that, linked to the question that was asked, what I have to indicate, ma'am, is that the question may have to be responded to through in a written format. We will have to go back and then make sure that we give you the proper response in a written format. On the issue of the second question that was dealing with the do we have intelligence capacity, My response is in a classical term of intelligence, and I want to make sure that we don't move into different areas. We've got three intelligence collecting bodies in terms of the legislations that accord them that responsibility, which is defense intelligence, crime intelligence with the police, and our intelligence with state security agency. We are not one of them, but we do have the risk management capacities within the tax as well as the customs environment. They do the risk management data analytics, and they put together information, and they put together what we call business intelligence, which leads and directs operations in terms of the work that we are doing. Should it be improved on a regular basis? We believe that it should be improved because we are dealing with a very complex industry where it is infiltrated by, I always believe that we have to give benefit of the doubt to the people who are legal traders, infiltrated by criminals who use it for their own means and so on. And then at all the times, they seem to be a step ahead of us, and then we can improve on that, and we will always try to work around to make sure that we improve our capacity. Thank you very much.
Chairperson,
can I
clarify?
Wants to ask a question to get clarity because we want an action program. They must be allowed to, right? Mena, whatever you get, Tandi gets also.
To the, I asked the question about the number of personnel, so let me refine my question then. Is there a current project, perhaps similar to the old project Honey Badger, underway in SARS to combat illicit activity in the tobacco industry? Question one. And if so, how many personnel in SARS are dedicated to that function?
Legal question. Right. Can you answer the question?
Can I respond to that?
Yeah.
Yes. The response to that is that we did not abandon Honey Badger. It may have not continued in this particular name, but the efforts with regard to tackling of illicit tobacco still continues. One, we are still working on integrated excise audits on tobacco and cigarette. And as of the last financial year, we managed to collect about 106 billion out of the audits that were conducted by excise tobacco. And then secondly, we still do have teams that are focused on the manufacturers on imports, and then our customs risk and case selection as well as the tax case selection are providing us with the targets that we are following in terms of stopping the goods that are coming in as imports, and then we intervene as such. So that particular project is still ongoing. It may not necessarily be called Honey Badger. And there was a question again which related to the issue of placing our customs officers at the manufacturing points. I would like to state that at the moment that is one of the operational matters that we will consider as and when we engage with the industry as well as our colleagues from other government departments. So at the moment we may not give you a response in terms of putting the people on the ground. Thank you very much.
Chair, just to get, I wonder if I'm being unclear. Number of personnel requires a number in the reply.
No, no, Chair, it's not about whether it's a constitutional issue. I'm going to illustrate what I'm talking about so that you understand. You see, can you imagine if the Hawks it's having an operation that they are conducting, and then we ask them how many personnel have they deployed in that operation, and a very sensitive operation that's going, when they expose the numbers in public, might compromise the operation. Is that what you want to know? Because I thought we wanted to know whether they are conducting financial intelligence, and they are saying yes, which is good. That's what we want. But if we want to know how many people are involved, then we need to understand why, where are we going in relation to operations. And if you are allowing it, it's fine, allow it, but one day I'll remind you how it's going to backfire back on us in relation to when we get into operational space, which is not our purview.
Well, I don't have any authority unless we can be guided by lawyers. We have asked similar questions before.
on illicit financial flows, as you'll remember, every quarter when SARS appears, we ask how many people have you got attending to this? Then they tell us we have a shortfall in staff here, there, and everywhere. Secondly, we have had people saying in the public domain that a deliberate attempt has been made, I don't know whether it's true, to reduce the numbers dealing with IFS, and we ask them, how many did you have before? How many have you got now? This is another form of IFS. I think in fairness, Tandy, I see where you're going, but it's not a very sensitive intelligence matter in a context where these issues are in the public domain. And what we would like as a finance committee, if you need more support, then the committee has to, in its quarterly report next, not quarterly, its budget report next week, say that we feel that the numbers and quality of people employed by SARS in the IFS sector or ITT sector should be strengthened. That's all it's about.
Can I explain this? I'm being misconstrued. You see, this is a different operation. It's not like about how many people are engaging on sharing of information in terms of a treaty that you want to...
He's asking about how many people are...
Yeah, I'm making... Chair, can I finish the point? You understand why? You see, this is a unique unit within SARS that's called an intelligence capacity. It's a different unit. It's not like any other unit that David is asking the question about. He's asking about this specific one, Operation Honey Badger. It's got an intelligence capacity. It does surveillance.
All right, can I ask you a question? In your annual report, do you mention the numbers that are there? And if not, why not? Answer that. If it's there in the annual report, then a member of parliament is entitled to ask it. SARS, can you respond? In your annual report, do you deal with numbers deployed in different units? In this particular unit, yes.
So, Chairperson,
you have a right to ask.
I mean, I'm a little worried that Tondi might have inadvertently caused some confusion. I think we don't want, or we'd want SARS to clarify whether, in fact, SARS, as part of this project to combat illicit tobacco, does conduct surveillance and intelligence operations. My understanding from the presenter was that they do not. If they do, that would be major cause for concern, because it would mean that there would once again be the equivalent of a so-called SARS rogue unit inside SARS. So I think we must give SARS an opportunity to clarify. Because
it's a high-risk investigation.
You see, yeah, I don't agree. You see, that's the point. That's the point I was saying.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, right.
Sometimes you don't listen to David where he's going.
No, he's
calling them a rogue unit, and I don't agree with that.
No, that's different. Tandy, I have to chair according to the rules. I don't have an authority to suppress anybody. And you must change the rules, as I keep saying. So, can we go back to SARS? Do you mention this in your report or not? Simple question.
So, Chairperson, we mention the number of people in total in SARS. We also mention to a certain extent where people are perhaps in different organizational divisions as such. But we don't necessarily go deep into that. So a project like Project Honey Badger would have been made of different sections of the organization. So when Mr. Mwai responded, he said at the moment we've got an integrated team, and I did mention this in my presentation, that we've got an integrated team that deals with excise audits as such. Now, that integrated team will be made up of different sections of, or people drawn from different sections of the organization. People from my unit, which I head, which is compliance risk for customs and case election, would play a role in that. People from tax compliance risk would also play a role in that particular project. People from customs investigation, which is actually a post-clearance audit, will play a role in that. So there would be a core team that deals with the coordination, but different people from different sections will give input into that particular team. So that particular team might not necessarily have a stagnant number, depending on what aspect of the case we're dealing with at that particular time, that particular person with that information will be drawn into the project to give that information to the project, therefore. And we don't necessarily report in the annual report, to reiterate, exactly what we do in those particular areas and how many people are there in those areas.
Okay, you're saying that people cooperate from different units, you don't have a standard number, and it depends on, it's project driven. That's all we need to know, right? Fine. The question then, sorry? Yeah, to ask a rough number is fair. No, I'm ruling now, Thandi. You go and challenge this with the Rules Committee and the Chair. I can't do anything. Yes, I'm asking. ANC member, 46 years, 47 years in a struggle. I'm asking you, give me an overall figure. Forget Mr. Mania.
We'll do such a bit in writing, thanks.
Right, good, thank you. Right, can we have it in 7 days? If you cannot answer that question, give me a lawyer's letter why you can't. Parliament has told you to account. Never mind who says what, I am asking you the question as the Chair. Forget that. Right, can we move on? Well, they do not have that legal authority. And if they are doing it, they're not going to tell you. Right? So the answer is no. They do not do intelligence. Right? That's the whole issue. Thank you. Can we move on? Are there any other questions directed to you haven't answered?
Yes. I think, on the basis of the questions that were directed, we have responded to all the questions, unless there is any.
All right. So members, we'll come back if there's a question that's outstanding, has not been answered precisely. Yes, William.
Mr. Mpian.
So the just last question on interpretation of Section 4 or something like that in the Tax Act or the Secrecy Clause, so-called Secrecy Clause in the TAR, if we can just clarify that. Peter will take care of the things.
Thank you, Chair. Two things. I just want to state that we do not have a intelligence function as being purported as doing surveillance. I just want to put that on the table and close that off. Secondly, our secrecy provisions is not there to impede any investigation. It is quite clear that where there's, even from the Organized Crime Act, where there's information sorted through that act, it overrules our secrecy provisions, and we need to provide such information. Secondly, where SARS finalized an investigation and handed over to the SAPSA or the MPA, it clearly indicates that we must do whatever is necessary to secure a successful prosecution. We've set up a dedicated unit for our interdependency management and to clear any other issues in such regard. We've set up, even with the SIU, there's processes in place on where they seek certain information that we can provide such. And I want to urge any of our colleagues, where they have any of these struggles to get any information and to obtain clarity regarding our views, we can raise it with the relevant interdependency manager, or they can contact me directly. Thank you.
Right. Next then is the FIC.
I'll just touch on a few matters. I think it's very much unfair to really assume that we only start talking about coordination when we come here or when we are preparing to come here. It's just unfortunate that the NDPP is not here, but I can just place it on the record that we have had discussions with the NPA, very good discussions, as well as with the police. In fact, if it were for the NDPP, we would have been far on this issue. I must say we've been found wanting that by the Financial Action Force when it comes to the issue of states that are talking to each other. And if you don't have those states that are talking to each other, you won't really be able to understand where the problem is, where is it that it's itching, and where we need to improve. Well, we've been having those discussions with the NPA and with the police, but we are not really at a stage where we can say this is the database, but we are having discussions, and we've had those discussions before, way before we came here. On the issue of illicit financial flows, we are also talking, and there is coordination. All the members that are here, SARS is represented. The meetings are normally held in the FIC offices. My colleague, my executive, is chairing those meetings, and it's regular meetings where we have identified really high priority cases that we need to be focusing on. So, and there is no challenge really when it comes to sharing of information. Our act, the FIC Act, it takes precedence. Section 37 says no one can come and claim duty to secrecy or confidentiality when it comes to the disclosure of information that we are seeking as AFIC. It's unfortunate that really I can't really speak on behalf of my colleagues, but there is a lot that is happening. It's just that we just asked a few days ago to come and present here. But on the issue of financial flows, we're talking, and we need to be improving.
All right, then
is
the answer
to
the FIC? No. Then next, who's...
Sorry, yeah?
No, nothing.
Okay, good. Next is who's following? You know the order in which you spoke. Next is Hawke. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. I think just to start with, say that I know it was a comment by the honorable member, what's her name, Tandy?
Tobias,
honorable member Tobias. I agree with the border management that can be approved, and I think we together with SARS need to work together on it, because there are border policing being done at the borders. Then I think the honorable member also stated that they are mostly comments. Coming to the enforcement issue of Honorable Mainier, I would leave that to the NPA to whom the question was posed. Safe to say that indeed we are working hand in glove with each other, but they will comment further on that. When Honorable Member Gwen, on the issue of the counterfeiting is more complex to deal with, and I'll briefly explain. Counterfeit Goods Act, there's three different acts which reside under the Counterfeit Goods Act, which is the Copyright Act, the Trademarks Act, and the Merchandise Mark Act. Now, we cannot act in terms of the Counterfeit Goods Act because Section 3 of that Act precludes us from acting in any proactive manner. It's clear as to who can act, and it speaks to the intellectual property rights owners, their representatives, their agents, their lawyers, or distributor or licensee. Those people only can lay charges, which means that first you need to establish that an intellectual property right has been infringed prior to any action that can be taken in that regard. So it becomes problematic when you say that, when it is said that counterfeit cigarettes has been brought in. It would now mean that whoever, with whomever that IP right vests, must complain or come to us to say that we have information that that is coming through at that point in time, and only then can we or any other party, be it SARS inspectors, act for that matter, but we cannot act arbitrarily as if in another crime situation. So that's the difference. The issue of the, when goods are coming through borders, just to put that picture, it's either it is not declared in terms of the Customs and Excise Act, or it's under-declared. So it would mean that even there, it is the SARS discipline, they would be laying the charges, and we would be doing the investigation from them. I think, Honorable Chair, I think those were the two issues, if I'm correct, that were addressed that required me to respond, unless CDP.
Chair, I thought... you don't do this in front of guests. No, Chair. I'm trying to reach targets. I want something that says... I need to, some sort of a promise from General Kana that when we meet, he's going to give us, you know.
I'm coming to you. You're telling us to speak here, right? Right, you finished. No, I agree. It's a finished. I'm trying to save my brother. Okay, we first with the maniac.
Chair, just I want to come back to the Section 4 and the secrecy provisions. Now, the General has said that SARS on previous occasions, or he suggested that SARS on previous occasions has withheld information using Section 4. SARS pledges, obviously, to correct that. But I wonder if you would provide us with particulars on how many occasions has SARS refused to hand over information dealing with Section 4, and what information specifically are they refusing to hand over?
Right, can I just read something before somebody jumps up here? Right, it's straightforward. He's asking a straightforward question. Can people just observe? What you're not going to give us is names. You don't have them anyway. And insofar as the nature of the information might reveal who we're talking about, don't release it. I'm ruling on this thing. But the rest is a straightforward question. Answer it, please.
Sorry for me not putting off my mic. On the question of, let me state, I'm the head
of commercial crime from a national perspective. I sit with provincial commanders, and when we have our meetings, especially you sit with cases that we have prioritized, why is this not moving, why is that case is not moving? To answer the question factually, I will have to go back. But when I speak on the basis of the problems we are having in terms of Section 4 being invoked, it is when we engage them and ask, but why is this case not moving? You gave me this report the last time. Then that is the question that they say, the answer they give. To say, but we are struggling to get this, and this is the position. Now, it was said there are legal provisions, Section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act, that can be invoked. But I think, it, you know, as government departments, we don't want to see each other in court. Trying. We can first do this through this avenue to say, let's talk and see how we can reach. That's why I wrote to that other in office. Not to say we are fighting and they are trying to stifle our investigations, to say, but if somebody, like the colleague said there, it may be that somebody at the lower end of the table maybe are raising it, unknown to the ones at the bottom, but now since they have opened that avenue, I think we will move there. After this meeting, we will then exchange, and I can communicate with our colleagues as to how best we can overcome this problem of Section 4. So, but it would also be now incumbent upon SARS to communicate downwards within the environment to say, no, 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 let's cooperate with the police in this environment. It has come to our attention, they are keeping problems, this should not be the case, and put that right. And I think that can happen even in the police environment. But the problems that came up through a collective meeting with our provincial commanders where they say that this is the problem. And I wouldn't have written to the Law Reform Commission if I did not feel that it is becoming a problem, just to get clarity from a legal perspective.
We will have to decide as a committee what we feel about going forward. We've got 15 minutes left. We have to give the two institutes 3 minutes each. But our primary thing is to hold... Well, not today, but if you want to ask for 30 seconds a question, I'll give you and Mr. Mania 30 seconds each.
I don't want to ask a question.
It's incomplete, this discussion. I'm saying that, but now we decide what we're going to do about that.
That's what I was coming
to. Yeah, we're coming, we can deal with it at the end.
Okay.
Let's hear Tisa and Fita as well. Right, Mr. Mania?
Just a final question of clarity. Chair, I would request that in respect of the Hawks that we try to get to the bottom of the prevalence of the Section 4 problem and perhaps ask for the number of cases and maybe the domain.
You can give it to us in 10 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
The second point, I just want to come back to the question of intelligence. SARS has cleared up. They do not collect intelligence. But how do you distinguish between intelligence and business intelligence? What is the distinction between the two? Because if you look at the state, at the literature, the what begins as a benign, if you like, information gathering.
I know you're going, but it's not really. David, we're running out of time.
Into an intelligence.
Yeah,
so
fine.
How do you
okay. That's different now. No, you don't want me about anything. The rules apply. Tandy, it applies to you. Let's not discuss this, Tandy. Can we discuss this offline? Go and speak to the speaker and go and change the constitution. He has a right to say these things. But now this one, I'm ruling out. It's not relevant to this immediate debate, given the constraints and time. Now, the next issue, then, is the NPA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think there are two issues. The first issue with regard to the cooperation with the DPCI. It's a misnomer to say that there isn't this cooperation with the DPCI.
There's nothing in the law. Of course not.
There's nothing in the law, and I think that...
They're not interested in your answer, but go ahead. Can you record it? That there's nothing stopping a prosecution-driven investigation in the law.
Prosecution-guided investigations.
Yeah. That equally, you fail to do it, the Justice Committee must hold you to account, and Police Committee. Yeah.
Equally so, I think that we must speak about what it is that we have done. General Connor is not here. 911 cases were finalized between the SCCU and the serious commercial component of the DPCI that works on the prosecution-guided methodology with a 94% conviction rate through the court systems. So I think that speaks to what it is that is in place. What we do need to improve upon is how it is that we decide, and this is not a DPCI-NPA challenge, it is a broader challenge as to what we are going to identify as priorities. So once again, when one talks about the cooperation that there is, the issue of cooperation has not, like my colleague from FIC has indicated, the director has indicated, does not start before we just come to Parliament. The engagements that we had with the FIC started last year already. the direct engagements of the director on the memorandum of understanding that we have in place started in early February this year. In respect of SARS, we actually started last year with the drafting, which is in the final stages of the memorandum of understanding, which would allow ourselves to decide on what are going to be our joint priority and focus areas, specifically about identifying and dealing with those high-risk offenders, the repeat offenders, as has been indicated. And I think that if one has to look at the appetite to deal with those types of offenders, the specialized tax unit and their prosecutions of high-risk offenders or high-level offenders that have been regarded as repeat offenders and problems with our systems insofar as VAT is concerned has been done.
Okay. Thank you. Right, we're all done. Can I just say something before I come to the two of you? Can we make something clear? We did not say you convene quickly, hurriedly. You couldn't have done it between Thursday and now. What we are saying is we get the sense when you come here that you're not saying the same thing. So when we're talking about coordination, we're not talking about meetings. We're talking about, do you have a strategic structure that meets like every last Friday of the month or every 6 weeks, every sixth Friday of the month or every sixth Monday of the month? Two, does it prepare a collective strategy which takes into account all six of you or five of you that are here? And you will each have different tactical approaches and different vantage points, but do you share a collective approach? Three, none of you is able to give us a question put to you, do you have a consensual figure that we're losing between 5 billion and 10 billion or 10 billion and 20 billion? That you don't do so shows exactly that the committee is right. You're talking about empirical things. We met on the 12th of February. We met last year, when this thing has been going around. Those criminals are walking up and down the streets, and they show off. They boast. Look what we are doing, right? I know one of them from others. It's horrific what he says about how he's got all of you in his back pocket. He may be exaggerating. But what I'm saying in short is you're empiricizing it. We met yesterday. We met last week. No. We want a structure that has a strategy and results. The next thing is, where are the results? Why, if you are meeting regularly, you see, it's not about meetings. That's like an empirical answer. The answer is, what is the outcome? We're outcomes-driven since 2009. What is the outcome? Why are so many people getting away? You can't even give us a figure. Now the committee wants to issue a short statement. What are we going to say? Can somebody speak on behalf of all? Is there a okay, who's the coordinator of the structure that you speak of? Who's the coordinator? Who chairs the structure? Which minister chairs the structure? So, which political head is coordinating you? Who is currently chairing the structure? Tell us. You say you have established structure that meets regularly. Who's doing this? Yeah. Who convenes the meeting? So you convene regular meetings. Okay. So who's in charge of the political interministerial committee? That's what we're saying. Yeah, but you see, did Minister Nene or Malusi Kikaba convene a meeting of the ministers concerned that you know of? Because the ministers will ask you for documents. So when was this meeting held? All right, we think the minister shortly will ask him, right? So our view is, we don't want reports about empirical stuff. We want a strategy, a structure, regular meetings, and outcomes. Having said that, over to TISA, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
We've got another meeting at 13:15 to remind ANC members.
Thank you, Chair. I don't need 3 minutes. Thank you again. The Treasury slide put up by Mpo clearly indicates there's a decline in excise in tobacco. And then there's a huge bracket saying that is the illicit trade. So that's clear to all. The question is, how big is that gap? That gap is total consumption less duties paid to SARS on which Treasury reports. That is the gap. That is actually work that government should do. Government should be able to say the illicit market is 25 or 30%. But we, as far as I know, as from the private sector, as TISA, we commission independent third-party arm's-length research with a credible research institution to measure the illicit market. And that's where we get to the quarter of the market. It's our effort. There's no other studies that I know of determining the size of the gap that Treasury refers to. So there's a leaking hole. So I just want to make that point. Illicit.
How much do you think is being lost to the revenue? How much do you think?
Well, according to our research results, there's at least $5 billion a year. And that relates to about a quarter of the market. Now that gap, sir, back to the question, can be many things. There might be a bit of counterfeiting in there. There is still a bit of...
And all that. So between $5 billion and what's the top ceiling?
Five and seven billion per year.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. The biggest hole is duties not paid, and therefore we plead, let everybody just pay their taxes. And the quickest thing is for SARS to put customs officials in the factories. That is a quick win.
Fine.
Thank you, sir.
On the customs officials, Tandy and I agree. We think, look, given the criminality, they should be put there. Now, Tandy, I agree with you. I understand Gwen. Oh, it's good the minister is here. Very good. He's here. Right. So, because we've got some decisions for him. Right. Can we have Peter? We're about to finish. Peter, please. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Quickly.
Peter, please, please.
Quickly, just my response to a few of the issues raised. In relation to the to what was raised by the representative of the Hawks, we have in fact met with former Police Minister Natsi Ntlego, and we did discuss our issues and grievances, as we had mentioned earlier, about inter alia the counterfeiting of our member brands and smuggling and all sorts of other practices which affect our members. We have also written correspondence after Minister Ntlego was shifted to Minister Mbalula and thereafter Minister Qele, and further we have written letters to the National Commissioner of Police, to which we have received no response as of yet. In relation to the question about other areas which lead to the fiscus bleeding and losing, we've highlighted complex and aggressive tax avoidance schemes which fall under the umbrella of BEPS, or base erosion and profit shifting. Yeah, indeed. So that's in essence. In closing, Chair, I think everyone here is sort of throwing around number of ideas. We're all not moving or singing to the same tune. And I think, for instance, me and Francois have agreed, as SARS had intimated, that we should meet and, as a private sector, iron out our own issues and identify a uniform sort of issues that we can then engage with the other stakeholders in order that we then don't all pull in opposite directions and everyone has a
So we're running out of time. Look, basically, what I suggest is next week we're going to look at the minister's budget, right? National Treasury's budget. So I think we should have a paragraph, Sakele, in it, reasonable, half page if you had to, based on this meeting, so that it becomes part of our programmatic review each quarter of National Treasury and SARS. Essentially, it's around the need for more effective coordination. We're not saying there's no coordination. The need for a collective structure while recognizing that different entities here with a different vantage point. The need for a meeting before the 2019 elections again. The need for progress. The need to beef up the thing. And again, we'll call on the minister, our minister, because we can't, to coordinate the various structures that are here, answerable to different ministers, but in particular also Home Affairs for that case, right? So between Sakele and me, we'll draft something. In fact, Sakele, we'll do it in the next 24 hours, right? And then what we're going to do is use it as a draft. We can give it to members even before next Tuesday, something we insert into our report. So I thank you all. I know everybody is unhappy because not all of you answered all the questions, including the members could put it, but there we are. Thank you very much. The final item on the agenda, you can leave now, is an internal matter. I don't think we can discuss it now, but there is a draft sent out to you which we'll email to you this afternoon. Just to say the following. One, as mandated by the last meeting when we looked at the program, we said that we cannot finish the VAT business until the minister's panel finishes its work. I think it's the 30th of June that the minister's panel is going to finish its work. Secondly, National Treasury has agreed to have at least two major workshops with all the stakeholders. Right? Thirdly, we said let's bring forward the carbon tax bill. But as I said, I've been battling with the chair. I think he's out of the country now, right? So he's not happy with the dates we've given him in the program. Can I alert you to the dates? The dates we've given are, if you look in the program very quickly, it's, where is it, 15th or 16th? Yeah, 15th, right? So he says he can't make the 15th, so he's suggesting Friday. Now, the last Friday of the month, I'm completely out, but if that has to be the case, then it'll have to be Friday the 25th. Otherwise, I've suggested Friday the 18th. Are people listening, Tandy? You're the whip, right?
Tandy, there's no election coming up. No? Oh, yeah, there are list conferences, but these comrades are not voting there, right? So, right. So now, yeah, so Friday, can colleagues remember, the Environment Committee says they can't do. I have spoken to Mr. Mania last week about using Thursday afternoons, right? So we will have to see what the outcome is. I've spoken to Chief of Jackson Mtembu, he's sympathetic. Yeah, right. So basically what we are saying is that I'll have to speak to Floyd Chivambu. So on the carbon tax bill, there's another request. The chairperson on that side wants a whole workshop on it. Personally, I'm not convinced, because once we do all this, National Treasury applying, the civil society stakeholders applying, it's a workshop. But then there's a date for the workshop. It's tentatively set for, there's a date somewhere, Wednesday the 6th of June. Right, we're sitting all days in the committee week. Then I was requested to, the South African Airways came to us and said both the chairperson and the CEO are out of the country on the 9th. Right? So we understood they have to go out of the country, right, both of them. So we said, no, it's fine. I hope the minister's listening. We said, okay, get out of the country, provided you're doing work that's important. We will postpone it to the 16th. So Cindy's following up on that, right? Now we asked Irva, listen, we haven't looked at your annual report for a long time. The FIC, we've also alerted them, we haven't. We've agreed in the five-year term at least once each of the institutes appear. FIC hasn't, they're going to appear, but they're not ready with it, and they're going to bring it to us in the third quarter. On Irva, they have not presented the annual report for a while. But secondly, we're very sympathetic, Minister, to their request for more powers to deal with errant auditors. And I believe an omnibus bill is coming in that regard. But we said to them, come, you can raise those issues, although it's the Treasury that will bring those things. Then on the PIC bill, we've got a problem. What's your name? Frank. Listen, my brother. As I understand it, right, can I check something? Do we have to have a complete bill before we go to the House to get a resolution? Or can we say these are the three or four items that the committee wants to foster a bill on? Would we have to have the bill tabled?
You can do the latter, Chairperson.
So let's do that.
Okay.
Now our problem is, that's why I put the dates that I have last night.
Yeah.
Our problem is there's no plenary apart from tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why we put the hearings where we have. Because when are we going to have the first plenary? Now, if Mr. Mania is cooperative, because it's his bill also that gets held up, we're going to have one public hearing for both bills, is it possible that you and I can do a draft, right? We as the ANC will come to some positions today, in any case, in the next hour or so. But as I understand the decision, where we disagree with you, Mr. Mania, is that we want the mandate put into the bill. The second area is that we don't think that the DM or the minister shouldn't be the chair of the board. Now, related to that, a decision we'll take shortly is whether the minister should appoint the other members or whether it should be parliament, right? But remember, this is just to insert it into a public hearing. Having heard the parties, we'll see. This is basically workers' money. So we can present ourselves as their representatives. No, no, no. They must also do what they have to do to hold the PIC to account. Now, we've got a request from Mr. Mania, a press release actually, but we discussed this last week, colleagues. So I don't want, now we're running out of time, maybe next week we can look at it. You will recall we discussed the shopping list approach. You see, every weekend you're going to get the City Press or the Sunday Times or the Sunday Evening carrying some or other article about some or other institute that falls under our aegis. Now what we are saying is we can't constantly in the last year of the term, curtailed as it is for this quarter by 1 month, we can't, each time an issue occurs in the paper, we don't know the veracity of it, insert it into our program, especially where we have got the PIC. The PIC will be coming here 3 times in the next 6 weeks. So nobody in this committee, whichever party they come from, is not appalled if it's true what appeared in the City Press on Sunday. We're all appalled. But we are meeting them anyway, and we're trying to tackle it not like piecemeal. We're dealing with the issue legislatively. And it's Mr. Mania and the committee that are doing it. So we're taking our oversight seriously. So if we do achieve, and there we do agree, right, that they must list everything. In any case, the previous deputy minister did it, right? So we agree on that. So these things will be curtailed. So what I'm saying is I'm asking Mr. Mania and his team in the DA to think about it. We can discuss it next week. But we have got them coming. And we've got a problem now about the practicality, right? And I'm negotiating certain things about the program. So what I'm saying is we take a collective decision next week. But I'm pleading that once we agree now,
Every time there's something in the media, we can't, the media can't actually determine our program. Nor can I stress once again, Tandi, people can write to the New York Times if they want and the Washington Post. We must not change our program for fear that somebody is using the media to leverage a committee program. No, it's not going to happen. Finally, I was astonished to learn last week that there are committees that have not finished bills from 2015, right? Now, here's this committee, as Dick Lady turned to me to say, we get the biggest legislative load, right? Even right now, if you look at it, this year, we've got the largest legislative load, yet we have never failed to deliver. Where we've postponed things is because the regulatory board, but the FSRA Act was too complex, and the Insurance Act, we had to finish the FST. So there we are, comrades. What I'm saying to you is we've got to stop the shopping list approach. Nobody's applauding what the PIC is supposedly doing, but we're dealing with it. Apart from that, a question that Mr. Lees has raised is already on the agenda. We've asked Mr. Frank Jenkins, at least, to please find out whether we can amend the legislation. I hope the minister is listening. On this thing of every time there's a case, no, the SARS Act rules it out. So we asked him to look at that. That project is there, Mr. Lees. Your letter can feed into it, right? But we can't have you write 1,000 letters in that regard. It's there. Now, if you can create more than 25 hours in a day and 8 days a week, well, we can proceed. So the only outstanding matter is Mr. Mania has proposed, Tandi and others, can you think about this? I sent it to the study group last night, eight-hour sitting or something on the PIC accusations this last weekend, and we've already discussed, what's that, Sagamata and AYO. Look, I've been out of the country for a week, right? Sagamata, I see it's M-A-T-H-A. Right. So let me say to you, colleagues, we're not going to discuss this endlessly. So next week we vote on it and we pass a resolution. No shopping list. I thought you agreed to a shopping list. Guess what? There's a media statement. Somebody from Afrometer rang me while I was driving back from Kutu on May Day to tell me there's a request there. I said, that's a media statement. We've covered that ground and the committee will decide. So I suggest the committee decides next week on the matter, Mr. Mania, quickly. We're not disagreeing with you. It's there.
Chair, I don't want to conflate what I'm requesting with what's on the program. What's on the program are three meetings with the PIC to deal with two bills relating to the PIC. Those are meetings dealing with legislation. Okay. I'm asking for a meeting where we do oversight on the PIC in respect of not only the outcome of the investigation in relation to Dr. Dan Machila and the suspension of executives, but also in respect of specific questionable investments. And that meeting proceed on the basis of prior access to the minutes of investment committee meetings. What this committee needs is access to the relevant minutes of the investment committee.
Can you please be excused? This is her area. Right. Can you answer the question?
So what I'm proposing, if we are going to deal with the questionable investments, that prior to that meeting, we have full access to minutes of the PIC's investment committee and all the relevant minutes dealing with those
I sent the copy to them. Now, basically, can I just say one thing? Firstly, to clarify, we have got PIC bills and oversight issues on Thursday, the 31st of May. So it's there. It flows from last week. It's related to the bills that we are passing because we want to prevent this happening. So you're covered, right? Secondly, the only outstanding issue that I want ANC people to think about, I know what Tandi is going to say. Let me speak for her because she wasn't listening. And I agree with her. See what she's going to argue. As a spokesperson for Tandi, Tobias Pokola, because I have nothing else to do, right? My job is to be a spokesperson. So as a spokesperson, I can tell you what my boss will say. And she's right. She will say investment decisions minutes are extremely market sensitive.
Yeah.
Right? And for anybody to ask for it is bordering on undermining the role of the PIC. So where there we disagree. Instead of having a long discussion, can I say that as your spokesperson have done well, you will communicate to me a commission. Right. And I agree with her, right? Now, let us think about it, how we do it, find some sort of compromise if there is. We'll come back to you next week and then we vote on this thing. But it's there on the agenda because we want it also. So, no, it's there. Can't you read it? It's there. It says read in English, your language, right? It's not in Sesotho, it's in English. It's on what date is it? Thursday, the 31st. You see the FST report, the minister is here. We're only going to look at the recommendation. What are they doing? They're having this financial sector summit. Have they inserted our recommendations in there? Right? They'll have to do it. Because we will not allow the minister to, and the treasury to get away. Who did the work? Hours and hours. So that will take how long? If my sister there agrees, it's a two-hour meeting. Yes. For the remainder, we will look at the oversight issues and the PIC bills from, say, about 12 to 16.00. So you've got plenty of time. The only issue that we may not agree on, I don't think I'm going to agree, but let's see, the rules must apply. We must get opinion, legal opinion on it. I don't think it's the right thing to do, but let's discuss it. Okay? Let's discuss it.
Chair, I
particularly
think
my friend.
On the issue of the PIC and other stuff that you have circulated, and Mr. Menya has had some additions that he wants us to add. I have commented on that on that communique. I'm begging that consult with him and Floyd as the people who are consistent in attending the meeting, that we agree on the approach, because we must deal with this thing once and for all. As you say, you can't always allow media to determine our agenda and, you know, take most of the time arguing on the approach.
But let me put this to you. We really value what the media does in this country. They get it very wrong and damage people's reputations. But they also get it very right. Without them, we would not have been able to tackle corruption. So we have to express our warmest appreciation of their work. That's not the issue. The problem we have, and I in particular, is where a member of this committee, whichever party may come from, uses the media as leverage. So what is in the program, they will issue a statement. Oh, it's a Sunday Times, get your research, and then the odd, not many people phone me, but it's irritating. When you're driving back from a rally, 1,600 people turned up, Tandy, I hit my hat. Not that I wear a hat. Okay, so I am not. I told the media guy, hey, listen here, I don't make these decisions, okay? They're under a lot of pressure with their performance management. You know what I say normally. They have to show how many inches, column inches, and all. I've raised this thing. I'm not going to. Fine. But the issue is on the agenda. We're going to, the ANC raised in November 2015, right? He doesn't want to believe us. Remember that study group meeting I raised in, right? But fine. Let them do what they want. In short, no person should think, if they write a letter to the media, we've written to Eunice Karim, that, you know, we're going to change the program. No, not under my watch, not at age 63. No, no, no. I'll be 63 by the time I'm gone, if the ANC remains me. Yeah, but you know, I always say I'm out in 63. Now listen, my friends, can we make something clear? You can write to the New York Times and Radio Mongolia. I don't care. Nobody objected to it. Mr. Elise was here. I don't care. No. It's waste my time. Because I was listening to lovely jazz on my radio, and this man phoned me. I have to respect the media. I'm listening to a hell of a nice jazz, right? Now, this man rings me four times. He's telling me, but you know, you've got this request. I laugh. I say, my brother, you know what? Yeah, I have to respond to the media. That's wasting my time, right? I mean, I'd rather listen to the music on May Day of all days. Listen to this nonsense. But
48 hours before that, maybe you should try reading your
correspondence. Yeah, but I'm not going to read it when I got work to do. You see, you guys got no constituency work. You sort of think you think hard work is typing. So there you are. Hard work is working on the computer. I've got better things in life. Thank you all. No need to reply. We'll vote on my last statement. Hey, we get a mandate on my last statement right now. Thank you. Bye. Can those who are foreigners, meaning not ANC, can they leave right now?
My God.
Yeah.